Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay.
Good?
Yep.
Go. Yeah. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are here back in the rugby dungeon to talk about the finale of the Six Nations Championship, the continuation of the Premiership, the finale of the Pro 14 and all the other rugby stories there are. JB's here.
Hello, Tim.
Hello. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Isn't it nice being in a nice, clean rugby dungeon, Phil?
It's always clean here.
Well, it's often clean. JB, you're wearing shoes as well.
I am. I don't want those pesky algorithms to pick up my my bare feet and share them with perverts.
Unfortunately, it's too late for that. That's what we're already associated with on YouTube. So automatically, we get served up to people with foot fetishes. But there you go. If you love rugby or you love feet, come join us on YouTube. We're streaming right now, in fact. And I'll keep an eye on the comments and stuff right there. Other than that, thank you for listening. If you haven't already, hit subscribe, because we're the only rugby podcast that's there for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks a year, come what may. And there's plenty to talk about on this one. I was going to say one more thing as well.
Yes, please.
I've mentioned Patreon. We mention Patreon regularly. We are on Patreon, patreon.com/eggchasers. And we humbly appreciate and humbly ask for your support there as well. But I did want to say and reiterate something we said before. If anyone is, by circumstance or for whatever reason, struggling a bit financially, and you still like to be in the chance to win the shirt draw or to get those live tickets when we can on a priority basis as well, we don't want money to be a barrier to anybody. So just drop us an email, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. No judgment, no questions asked. And
we'll just pick up the money when you can afford it. In person.
Well,
more-handed, three of us.
Well, yeah, exactly. Maybe when you make...
With a fair rate of interest.
Yeah, when you win the lottery or get the gig that you're really after, you might remember. So
Now, if you are watching this, you'll probably feel rather annoyed to see that, Tim, you've still not taken the Newport Gwent Trojan shirt down.
Oh, yeah, I will send that this week.
The worst shirt in history.
I know. Right, I'll tell you what. Firstly, I think we should start by congratulating Wales. We're living in Wayne's World. Wayne Pivak, what a man!
What a genius!
What a guy! I mean, do you want to apologise to Wayne Pivak firstly, JB?
I mean, look,
having called for his head in November.
Like I said, it's one of those situations where maybe he's got himself enough breathing room to be able to execute the things that he needs to do. So yeah, congratulations, Wales! That was a pretty awesome Six Nations, actually.
I do love how, as a Welshman, you're like through gritted teeth congratulating Wales.
And like I say, I don't really. The only thing I care about is not actually my nationality or my team. It's been right.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Yeah.
You did celebrate the France win over Wales in the last second to deny them a Grand Slam pretty vigorously last weekend. Because that proved you right in that
yes,
prediction.
Exactly right.
There was quite a funny meme doing the rounds over the weekend of Wayne Pivak's been sent to Suez because he can turn anything around.
Right, do you understand this? When they said that they've turned... I mean, bearing in mind, it's not a flexible object, that ship, is it? They said they've turned it 30 degrees on both sides. I mean, that involved... Well,
Phil, you're a structural engineer. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I'm not a structural engineer.
Well, you're not.
I work in engineering.
Oh, you have pretended to sign things off as a structural engineer.
Just don't go on the steelwork in my house.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's pivoting in the middle,
yeah,
and one end goes 30 degrees one way, and it was, if it's pivoting right in the middle, the other end would be going 30 degrees.
I guess clockwise as well, or anticlockwise as well. I guess what I'm trying to say, right, is I can't imagine a scenario where that ship goes 30 degrees one way, but the other side stays exactly the same. That, to me, sounds... If you tell me a ship of that size has gone 30 degrees on one side, I tend to think it's gone on the other side too. Unless...
Well, it's pivoting at the end. So if it pivots at the end, maybe. So if it pivots in the middle, right in the middle, as in the ship is 400 metres long and you pick a point that is 200 metres from either end, and one... If it pivots from the middle and one end goes 30 degrees so one way, the other end will go 30 degrees the other way.
So now I've got even more doubts, actually. Because I don't think there's any chance they got it to pivot exactly in the middle.
Well, it's unlikely it would be exactly in the middle.
Yes, they're lying to us.
They might be. They might have rounded up. It might have been 27 degrees one way and 33 degrees the other way.
So I've had to think about this. I think, seriously, the only way to get that thing moved quickly, because of the sheer mass of it, is actually to drive another ship of equal size into the stern. I can't think of any other way to get... I mean, surely I'd have enough force to move it, no?
Send André Esterhazy into it.
Yeah, exactly.
André Esterhazy on one side and the semi-rondrenda the other side.
And if worse comes to worse, they can just offload the containers.
Yeah, but then surely the... we're getting too much into this.
Yes,
surely the mass of the ship is great enough that it would be ground out at either end, with or without the containers, because the ship will weigh
this is their latest plan, isn't it? They want to take the containers off to give it more buoyancy, so then they can move it. That's one
of the plans.
Yeah.
Good luck to them.
Indeed.
So I just want to say congratulations to Wayne Pivac, not only on a Six Nations Championship, but on his curtains.
Oh, my God.
There's two places you still see tassels in 2021. at a strip bar and in Wayne Pivac's living room.
Yeah.
I mean, why not pick a blank wall? Why not print something that is of the correct size for the background to be the only thing in shot?
How was it? Like, where was it connected to? Because it was moving.
It seemed to be moving.
On the little backdrop, the branded backdrop.
Yeah.
I suspect his chair was touching the curtains, and it was actually like sellotape to the curtains.
I mean,
so every time the chair moves a little bit, the curtains just wiggle.
I mean, it did make it look like he was wearing it on his back.
It did, didn't it? Like a stick thing. Do you like the Domino's pizza sellers in town? So what was I going to say on that? The one thing I'm certain is true on that whole scenario is that Dove would be delighted with their branding being displayed in such a way.
Oh, yeah.
Dove, Guinness, there's others, some big sponsors on there.
It looks very, very, it looks consummately professional.
Professional, yeah.
So I'm sorry to mention him again. No, I'm not even going to mention him by name, but our favourite journalist said, quote, "the best Six Nations competition ever."
It's a good shout, you know.
You think?
It's not the... I mean, the games... If they had crowds, I think we'd be talking about it as one of the greats. Not the greatest, but one of the greats. It was a brilliant competition.
I think we're blinded by just how good the finish was. As in, the last two games, the France-Wales and then France-Scotland, are two of the all-time great games.
Yeah.
With match-winning tries, basically on the buzzer, in both games that... Well, both of them, at that point, decided the tournament. Certainly the first one definitely decided the tournament.
Continuation of the tournament. Yeah.
And the second one, well, it prevented France from winning, albeit at that stage it would have been impossible for them to win.
If you think of the performances, like all of Wales' games were games they won despite themselves kind of thing. So...
I think that's a bit harsh.
Well, like the two red cards and then the England game. I mean, that England game got away from England.
The 14-0 head start they got, thanks to Gauzère.
Yeah, 14-0.
I'm not going there again.
14-0 head start.
They still put 40 points on England.
They did, and that's not to be taken away.
No, that is true. The quality of the French team, the quality of the England performance against the French team, the quality of the Scotland performance to beat the French. I mean, there's a lot going on. I don't think it's a terrible show.
I'm not sure it's the best either. Even though I loved the last two games, not having Super Saturday was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And probably a little bit from mine and Tim's side, as Englishmen wanting England to win, having only one out of five good performances from England. Because four of the games to watch as an English fan were pretty terrible. The game against Scotland was awful. The performance against Ireland was awful. Most of the performance against Wales. Italy, no one cares.
No, no one does care. Maybe the big difference is that France were good. And when's the last time that France was truly good? Truly good.
They've been building, haven't they? Because last season, they were good. The only team to beat them was Scotland, who've done it twice now in 2 years. Albeit last season, there was the red card to, I can't remember which prop, who punched Jamie Ritchie in the face. But
Hawass.
Was it Hawass who did it?
Hawass, yes.
Yeah. But so France were very good last year. They were good this year. And they've performed worse this year because they've lost two games and finished second rather than losing one game and finishing second. Mm. But yeah, the improvement of France, like the improvement of South Africa over the last few years, South Africa, who in 2015 were a shell of the team that we know they should be, it's good for the game.
And it is good.
All the improvements in Argentina, every time they get up for a World Cup and they've got a team that is capable of beating the top teams, every time Fiji put close to their best team out and then compete anyone, having more teams capable of winning things, which in the Six Nations, I'm exiting that tournament because I predicted Wales to finish fifth and Wales obviously won the whole thing. I think in that tournament, one of the things that does make it great is genuinely had a bounce ball gone different, a refereeing decision gone different, a red card gone differently. It could have been a totally different result and any one of those top five teams could have legitimately won the tournament.
Yeah.
And that makes it, not just this year, an amazing tournament. It makes the Six Nations the best rugby competition in the world, bar none.
I totally agree with that. I think you can't call it the greatest when 16.667% of games were completely meaningless. And I quite often didn't even bother watching them, the Italy matches.
Yeah, I used the Italy matches to get some cardio in. Most Italy games, because it was the earlier kickoff most weeks, I had to sit on the turbo trainer and do 80 minutes of cardio.
I used it for watching the Premiership. If there's something good on, I'd turn them back over. But yeah,
just in the live chat, Ben Smart says, "Does JB still have ADSL internet? And is it stuttering for anyone else? Don't worry, mate.
Is it?
Don't worry,
mate.
It's
so annoying.
I know. One of these days we'll get it right." One of these days we'll get it right.
Makes me so angry.
Stuart Gordon says, "Oh God, not again." I think that he might be referring to the same thing. But don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. The podcast will sound amazing, JB.
It will. It's a teaser for those people who dial in.
And did I mention patreon.com/FJasers, by the way? We are completely on our own without any backing, any big names. And congratulations to Wales. On to this game. For what it's worth, I don't agree with the statement, best Six Nations ever.
Yeah,
Super Saturday in 2017, or was it 2015?
15, 16, 17. I can't remember. It's one of
the
ones. Yeah,
you know the one.
A few years ago when every single game, every team had to score more points than the last, and every single game changed hands. The title changed hands every single time.
Yeah, so
I think that was 2015.
Right, so there was one. Well, Wales kicked off against Italy and they won it, and then someone else won.
Yeah,
then England hammered France, didn't they?
I think did England need to win by like
25 points?
Yeah,
like
that. Which year was that?
Yeah.
So I always remember it. I always remember being very drunk in a rugby club after a game.
Oh, I remember those. Do you remember those days?
Well, do I remember them? I've got an actual countdown clock somewhere because we'll be training again on Tuesday. Didsbury Talk H. So I can't wait.
Do you take like walk-up people just to come along for training? Just for
if people show up. In fact, there's
just for giggles. Can I just come and get some training in?
Yeah,
because it'll be fit. Will it be fitness? Will it be technical?
No, it will not be fitness.
Okay.
It won't be fitness. It'll be straight back into rugby, full on rugby.
Love it.
Yeah. I can't get my head over. My head round the fact that the RFU want us to go through a gradual build-up back into contact. Mostly because it sort of conflicts against all my libertarian leanings. And I think, who are you to tell me when I can do contact or not? But also,
there's very little we have control over anymore. And you're not allowed to, by law, leave the country. And you're damned if the government's going to come in and tell you what you can do, or anyone's going to come and tell you what you can do on your own training pitch.
Exactly right. Yeah. I want to see my friends, and I want to hit him in the head with my shoulder. In the chest, it's a joke. Change of behaviour brigade will be all over that. But yeah, the other reason is many people play rugby, on a weekend having not trained for bloody years.
Yeah. You never have a rugby tour. You never have a Vets game. You actually couldn't have a Vets game.
Every Vets game, nobody is trained.
Can you imagine if this, if that kind of feeling, the RFU said, no one on tour can play the morning after a big night out?
No.
It's not allowed anymore.
I wouldn't be surprised if they ban tours sooner rather than later.
So I found it. It was 2015.
Yeah.
Wales, so England, Ireland and Wales had all won three games going into the last weekend. Wales played Italy first, basically to lay down the marker. They put 61 points on Italy to get a plus 53 points difference. Ireland knew they had to win by 20 points to take the lead, and they won by 30 points, which gave England the target of 26 points, a 26-point win against France at Twickenham to win the title from Ireland. And they won by 20 points. So they would have had, if they'd have scored a converted try in the last minute, they would have won the tournament.
How miserable must it be winning the tournament but losing your last game?
It would be miserable.
So miserable.
That would be miserable.
We've won. Have a trophy.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what happened this year, isn't it, with Wales?
Yes, and, of course it is.
And the other thing for Wales this year was, I guess they gathered them together on the Saturday to hand out the trophy. But everyone was kind of spread around in their clubs and homes watching. Certainly, some of the players were actually playing on the Friday night. Lewis Rees-Zammit played on the Friday night before watching the Scotland-France game and confirming that he had won a Six Nations.
Congratulations.
Yes. And he beat Exeter.
Yeah.
And congratulations to Scotland, who got their first win in France since 1999. That's, fantastic performance by Scotland. Should be very, very proud. What on earth? France
so French,
that.
Wasn't it?
So French.
The Doulan.
Well, as soon as they knew they weren't going to win it, they may as well lose it in style. They may as well lose the whole thing.
Well, no,
and Doulan's been so good as well.
But winning a test match, winning an international match is important, and it's no small feat. And also, you've got 22 years of history there that you've just...
Ruined.
You've just ruined.
Yeah, and it didn't change the table for this, but that game, as every game does, counts for World Rugby ranking points, which counts for positions in the draw for the next World Cup, albeit France as a host nation. He might have been playing 4D chess and thinking, France as a host nation, it doesn't matter. We're already ranked in one of the pools as one of
They're
the top seeds. So it really doesn't matter. Doesn't mean a place in the Six Nations, doesn't mean world ranking points for the next tournament, so who cares?
Mm.
This was a hell of a game, though.
It really was.
Like, ignoring all the stuff with Wales, ignoring the monumental mistake by Doulan at the end, this was an amazing game. And Andy Nicol comment at half-time was spot-on, where he said, Scotland are playing the conditions because it was pouring down and they were playing intelligently, kicking the corner, putting box kicks up, chasing hard and doing it well. And France were playing the situation, which was France had to win by 21 points. Regardless of the conditions, they wanted to run everything, they wanted to play from everywhere. And that combination made it exciting, it made it interesting, it made it, with the threats that France had, it made it kind of nervous, because I was wanting Scotland to win. But it made for a great game. And another thing that made it for a great game, which is the same thing for the Wales-France game, is English referee. So Wayne Barnes refereed
this. Was it Wayne Barnes or Luke Pearce?
Luke Pearce did France-Wales last weekend.
Yes, you're right.
Wayne Barnes did this game. And both of them allowed the game to flow just enough. They were pedantic enough at the right time to let the players know they can't just get away with infringing all the time and slowing the game down. But they let the game flow enough that it created this amazing spectacle. It was a really, really good game.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that hurts about watching the fantastic performance of Wayne Barnes down the years and other English referees who are doing great as well, is just knowing that England can never have a game facilitated to such levels by one of these guys.
But you can have Nigel Owens.
Or Gozer.
Or Gozer, or all sorts of other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what made me think in this game? What's Dion van der Merwe going to do on the wing at Exeter? Exeter.
Worcester.
He could do all sorts of on the wing at Exeter. It'd be brilliant. But at Worcester?
Well, I mean, Worcester. I've got a soft spot for Worcester.
So do I, big time.
But I don't know what's going on at the moment. They're just... It's like they just don't care.
Well, we'll talk about them later, but... Yeah, I just think this guy is such a fine physical specimen. He's just—he's like a god.
He's enormous.
He really
is. He's explosive. He's broken the record this year for the most defenders beaten in a single tournament, 31, which beats Brian O'Driscoll, that was set back in 2000.
Really?
Yeah. So the most ever. So more than, God, think of all the great wingers who've played in the Six Nations.
Stockers,
Vakatawa, Nakatasi. Shane Williams has played multiple years, and Duan has broken that. Now, Duan's an interesting one because his attack is just, it's next level. He's so powerful.
Some things in his attack are next level.
So
my criticism of him is he's just not quite precise enough yet. Like, he does make mistakes still. And I say mistakes, like, maybe he makes mistakes because he... Nobody else is getting to that situation because no one else is going to run over three people to make the mistake. If that makes sense. But like, just he doesn't finish as much as he should. He finds himself in touch quite a lot. He tried to go around the outside of someone, which I thought was a complete rookie mistake because he was the best will in the world. Even if you're massive, they can shepherd you into touch.
Yeah, touchline's an extra defender.
Yeah,
he did that a few times. I think I'll forgive that on his attack because he's still so potent. Even with those weaknesses, he's still probably the single biggest attacking threat winger in the tournament this year. More so even than like Lewis Rees-Sammet, who's amazing. But Lewis Rees-Sammet does it when he has open field in front of him. And he can do some of the hard stuff, but...
Not the same.
Not the same. It's a different beast. But the thing that worries me, and the thing that I think... I don't think he'll travel with the Lions this year, because it's two things. His... defensive ability, actually, making tackles, but also...
Double agent.
Maybe. But his defensive urgency is something that's really weak, and Brian O'Driscoll did a really good video highlighting it a couple of weeks ago in the Scotland game when... Was it the Scotland game? It was one of the games where... Sorry, it's the Scotland game. The Ireland game where Henshaw scores. There's a cross-field kick... Chris Harris kind of taps it back, and Henshaw is the first man. Wins the race to get the ball down. And when Brian O'Driscoll was analysing it and he looks back from another angle, Henshaw's like 10 yards behind Duan van der Merwe. And van der Merwe he's not read the situation, not read the risk, and he's just ambling across. And Henshaw puts his foot down and wins the race.
I wonder though, because you are right about that. I remember seeing that. And that is obviously a big deal that his defence is somewhat... Well, not a suspect. I guess when you're that good for that long, you don't need to work on everything because the thing you do is so good. But I wonder if that thing he does do, which is carry the ball and be so potent in attack, would be enough for a bench spot. Because if you're chasing the game...
I think it won't, but I could be wrong. And look at Gatland, who historically has like some big wingers. But for me, it wouldn't be, but...
I think the day, like the dinosaurs, the days of the giants are out. They're becoming extinct. They're a rare breed, and I don't. The weaknesses, the strengths don't outweigh the weaknesses. As much as I've said on last week's podcast, I wish we'd just highlight the positives and what you can do rather than focusing on what you can't do. But I actually think that the conditioning of players is such that massive men have much less of an impact than they used to do.
I think it goes in cycles. So you see the small guys, you see the big guys, you see the small guys. It goes round and round and round and round. He'll just have to hold on, and he'll be back in favour. And then he'll go out of favour, and it'll be Darcy Graham again.
More Darcy Graham.
Yeah.
I think he will have a long career with Scotland, because he is very, very good. I'm just not sure I would take him on the Lions top.
So, I remember last week I mentioned about Tagburn. And is that the second row?
That's the second row back row.
That's the one I...
Small second row, big back row.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, there is a guy somewhere. There is a man somewhere who's decided this guy wasn't for him and let him go to Scotland. But I want to build now a coffee table book of rugby experts that let the players go. So obviously it'd be the guy who let go, Tyburn, and also the guy in South Africa who thought, you know what, Johan van der Merwe is just not for us.
Yeah, not good enough. Yeah. Same with Doggers.
He's getting nowhere near the South Africa team, though.
No, I didn't know about that.
No way. Mpimpi and Colby are like light years better.
Colby,
but they're also older.
Mpimpi probably is. I don't know if Colby's much older.
I think they're probably a bit older. And so also, they're different.
Chesley and Colby is certainly a different winger.
Would Duane van der Merwe be in the England squad? Like, how many of that Scotland team would? Like, I'm not knocking it.
Joe Cocker and a singer is liked in the England squad. So
He has been. He's not.
He went to World Cup. I mean, like, if you're taking Joe Cocker and a singer to World Cup, you're taking Duane van der Merwe.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. I don't think that will be the case in the next squads.
Joe Cocker's not got better.
Hey, listen, I'm not knocking it because, as we see with so many great teams, it's not about the individuals, it's about the collective. But I'm just that is what I find quite impressive about Scotland. I'm not sure how many people in the Scotland squad get into the England squad. I don't think many.
Well, this is, okay, not to go over again, but this is exactly the argument that I make about why is Eddie Jones not better than he is? Why are they finishing fifth? Because you are absolutely right. They do have to scratch around for players that maybe other teams don't want, or they have to pick up players who have been treated badly by England, like, for instance, like Redpath or Gary Graham or whoever it may be. So, yeah, I think that's a fair comment. They do very well. But I think it also does show that you have, like, your best players. So England have got some fantastic players. But you put together a bunch of players who are maybe 5% not quite as good, but they play as a team 10% better. Well, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with the availability and the quality of players available to you.
Yeah,
It doesn't always translate to a better team, though.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you rather take the team who are 5% less talented, but with a massive chip on their shoulder and something to prove?
Yes, and
then you keep reminding them of that continuously.
So it certainly, in that regard, I think that worked in Scotland's favour this year because they had, first of all, the France breaking the bubble and getting the original game called off. Then we've got the rearranged fixture, and then the French Twitter account posted the Happy Waffles Day picture, which, I mean, the team talk on Friday night from Gregor Townsend did not need to be very much at all.
Someone put a picture up. I can't remember who it was. It's someone on Twitter. So, if I remember, I'll give you credit. But it's either the French team or the Scottish team celebrating, but just holding waffles instead of beers.
I did see that. Yeah.
I will say though, just to keep feet on the ground.
Yes.
Beat France and beat England away, which must have been the first time that's happened in many. In a generation,
yeah, I think was it 95 that happened.
Okay,
maybe.
There you go. 95.
Yeah, it's that doesn't happen very frequently.
26 years ago was the last time that happened, and they still finished fourth.
Yeah. I'll tell you another interesting little wrinkle on this. Scotland were garbage during the World Cup. I mean, they were really awful.
Yeah, they got things totally wrong in the World Cup.
But they kept hold of Gregor Townsend. And maybe there's another
example. Same with Wayne Pivak. It was only 6 months ago, less than 6 months ago, people were saying, get rid of Pivak. And it was not so long ago, people were saying, Gregor Townsend, move over.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've got an open mind on Wayne Pivak. The Gregor Townsend thing is a bit different because where else would Scotland go? If you think about it, they kind of dismantled Glasgow in the pursuit of getting this guy over to Scotland. He's here. And if you let him go, well, you've not got any more Scottish coaches coming through. So you're going to have to do something pretty radical. They were really forced into a corner. In hindsight, wasn't a bad thing.
It definitely not a bad thing. And Gregor Townsend, I really like him. I like the way, really like the way he talks. I like the way his teams play the game. I still can't get over that they should be doing better, and they should be doing better than fourth. But the fine margins in the Six Nations. Exactly as I said before, that one of five teams could have won it this year, and I would count that Scotland in that. If a few bits. A few decisions, a few cards, and a few bounces of the ball go their way, they could be in with a good shot of winning it. It's just frustrating that it's not happened. Yeah, like they've not, they could have for the last few years been in that position, and it's repeatedly not done.
I think this is true. Wales managed only one of their conversions against Scotland. I think they missed the others, or the other others. I can't remember now. If they'd missed that one conversion that they got, Scotland would have won the tournament.
I mean, that you, if that's true, even if it's not, and it, but it, it won't be far off, as in maybe two conversions. The, it's the fine margins, the margins of stuff like that, and that, that is international sport. That is, and that's really the difference between finishing well first and fourth or first and fifth.
Yeah, and I took your tip off from last week, and I watched the England O2 inside line, the next level, and I watched the final episode as well. That, that content is as good as any rugby content that anyone produces around the world. It's brilliant.
It's really, really good. It gives you great insight. Like the one with the strength and conditioning, I obviously always wanted a bit more, but the amount of information they're giving away and the insight into how they're making everything competitive, who are the best, the data that they're using, obviously not specifically what data they're using, but the data they're using to compare and contrast individuals. Really, really interesting. You do get a flavour for kind of the mood in the camp. I think you do as well. And there seems to be, they're not going to show guys arguing and stuff like that. It's obviously
they should do though, shouldn't they?
Well, maybe they should. Maybe no one argues. Maybe everyone loves everyone.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it's really good insight.
How long have they been doing it for?
Oh, a while. They were doing it in the World Cup.
Did they do it when Benteo fell out with Macron?
The campfire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did they do it when Tuolangi and Solomona
go party?
The last one, that they were very honest. Maro, Owen Farrell, Ben Youngs and Eddie, very, very honest in the final episode of this particular Six Nations series. And just to follow on from what we talked about last week, Eddie Jones said, what did he say? He said, I think I might have written it. He said, this squad's time is done.
Yeah.
He said something like, this squad's time is done. And it will be a new squad, and so basically, it happened 2 years. It happened
Do you not think he should know this before he puts them out, though? Is that his job?
I don't know. I don't think we'll see that big of changes. I think we will see some, and I think there are a few people who probably won't play for England again.
Just think about this. Right?
I don't think it will be wholesale. I think there might be maybe 5 to 10 of that squad, that 30-man squad,
and most of the shadow squad gone.
Yeah, because the shadow squad was it was an opportunity to look at the kids, really, the shadow squad.
Yeah,
I don't know how this goes forward, and I don't know whether it's something to criticise him for or not, but maybe there's enough players that he likes with credit in the bank, maybe, and he thinks, okay, well, we'll give them one more shot and maybe they'll come good. But also, when you're paid so much and you are in charge of the biggest union in the world and you should be winning and yada, 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 you should really know this, shouldn't you? Shouldn't you know who's...
I just want to pick you up on that, because, yeah, I don't disagree, but I would also say, like, it's quite noticeable, the difference. People were going, oh, well, that was a bit silly from France. Oh, they lost the game. They weren't at their best, and Scotland deserved to win. Not. Fabien Galtier's got one of the biggest unions in the world, one of the biggest player pools in the world. You should be beating Scotland. It's out of... How can you not beat Scotland at home?
Well, I will say a couple of things on that. Firstly, I don't know the French situation as well as I know the English situation. So what Fabien Galtier gets up to... I just know less about it. That said, I do know that the French FFR are nowhere near the size of the RFU in terms of funding, in terms of the power that they have over the top 14. The top 14 run the roost there.
That doesn't really matter.
It does matter, because obviously player access.
Well, they've probably even got a bigger player pool than England.
They've got a bigger player pool, but player access. So you've got to decide what you think is important. Now, I would probably side with you on that, Tim. I'd say that your player pool is more important than your player access. But
the quality of your players probably matters more than the number of players.
Well, it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? But yes, I take that point.
Not always. Like New Zealand, totally overachieve in that sense, but
but the RFU would say, and the Premiership would say, it's more about player access. But like France couldn't even get their players to play in the final. So Fabien Galtier has got different challenges to Eddie Jones. I still hold Eddie Jones to the highest of standards. I should you as a proud Englishman.
Yeah, no, I do. And on the access issue, I just kind of want to say that the bleating from some people, Andy Nicholls, one of the people, just outraged that Scotland didn't have access to all of their players. It's like, well, okay, if you don't want to pay them to work, then you've got no place to complain.
I'm somewhat mixed on this. I think the international teams are making a big mistake by not allowing... Sorry, the leagues are making a big mistake by not giving all the internationals equal rights to be released. And the reason I think this is because at some point one of the leagues is going to get so big, probably the French one, that they'll eventually say, well, no one's getting released and they'll all stay here because we pay them the most and no, you can't have your players.
Well, there's a minimum they have to be released for.
Yeah.
Yeah, the international windows.
Just pure economics, eventually... let's say the difference between, say the French league was as big as the NFL, for instance, just to make it absolutely ridiculous. There's no way that England are getting their players back, no matter what they say, no matter what World Rugby say, no matter what anyone does. So they've got to be a bit careful how they treat all the other nations, because at some point someone might be bigger and then let the England players go.
All the English Premiership club said is, yeah, you can totally have access to them, but we want financial compensation for not having our people, and that's why they went down to five people, because Scotland only had a limited amount of money that they were willing to spend.
And I also completely get that too, because who pays them, who trains them, who fills up their pension, all of these things that,
I mean, if you were to take the full access to the players away from the Premiership clubs over the whole window, not just the international release, then the Scottish players would be worth, or South African or whoever it is, they'd be worth a good chunk less than they are.
Yeah, but you've got to remember,
because they'll be missing another five game weeks.
Kind of, Phil. Kind of. You've got to remember the George North case. Do you remember that?
I do remember the George North case.
George North had it in his contract that he could do all the things, go to the camps, go to the extra game in the autumn, yada, 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 yada.
But presumably he was worth less with that in his contract than if it's... If he plays five games less...
It was valued at 60k at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah. What was it valued at? I don't know.
I think it was 60k.
Yeah.
I think so.
Is that what the WIU paid Northampton?
Or was that not the fine?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, something happened.
Was a fine, there was a penalty. I guess my point was, you play five games fewer, you are worth less money.
Yeah.
Like, it's as simple as that.
But they don't get him unless they release him. Okay, so... I guess the point I was making is
you disagree.
I disagree with it, because it's not always about money for the Premiership teams. Because if it was about money, George North there'd be no problem. The Premiership, as an organisation, decided to fine Northampton because they said it diminished their brand and their competition. Which, of course, they are right. But it was in George North's contract.
It was, and Northampton put that in his contract, didn't they?
Yeah.
That whole release window, and this probably pushes my thinking to something I've been thinking for a little while, which is, I think there should be less rugby, and this is a point you've been making for a while, JB. If you're having Premiership teams going out with significantly reduced star quality, like we're seeing at the moment, for dual reasons, obviously no relegation, so people are blooding the kids, but also you've got a load of international stars missing, then it's not as good a product. And I'd rather have fewer overall games of rugby, but every single one being a higher quality.
So yeah, and we've got a problem, which is international rugby makes a lot of money.
That's a big problem.
But I prefer the club game. But then I'm obviously in the minority, because they're not, the club game's not going 8 million viewers or whatnot.
The club game, an average game, will probably get 1/100th of that many viewers. So yeah. There is a significant lean towards it. And Twickenham, every single game, Twickenham at probably averaging £200 a ticket, will sell out 85,000 seats.
I think
every single game.
The future has to be in the club game, right? Because the way I look at it is, you can't really... How could you run a competition along national lines as your main competition where all the focus is, and have, I don't know, 10 games of international rugby?
That's how cricket do it.
Yeah, actually they do. You're right.
Cricket do that. It's the reverse of football, though. I mean, football, lots of proper, genuine club football fans don't bother watching it. Certainly in the UK, I don't know what it's like. Certainly in England... And the North West in particular, lots of Liverpool, Man United, Man City fans
couldn't care less.
They will not even be aware. Actually, some Liverpool fans will almost boast about how unaware they are
United
of
fans
England
used to
games.
Be massively that way.
Yeah,
massively that way. You're right, actually. I haven't ever thought about cricket being that way. Cricket is exactly it, isn't
it? It's all central contracted players who get sent back to clubs when the international team wants them to get games and for agreed periods of time and agreed windows of time.
But you also get, because of the Big Bash and the IPL, which is short form windows where all the big paydays, like massive paydays for the best players, that has to coexist with the international game. So because the internationals doesn't generate enough money purely for their star players, so all the best England players, Stokes and Bairstow, will go and play definitely in the IPL, and some of the other players will play in the Big Bash in Australia as well, in order to make sure they're earning or maximising their earnings.
And so if that was to be mapped onto rugby, it would be a case that the Premiership would be a much less attractive proposition, would play with loads of academy kids and good, solid pros who might get half a dozen games, like Johnny Sexton, the way he is with Leinster.
Mm. Yeah.
They might get half a dozen games with Owen Farrell or whoever it is.
In the Championship.
In the Championship, yeah. And then the rest of the time they go and play. Go on, they go and play 3 months. All our England players are going to go and play 3 months in Japan.
Don't like that.
Wedge.
Well, don't like it. It makes me bristle.
So yeah, no.
The thought of it. Makes
but
me,
I, no. I could get on board with that if you had the kind of domestic window and then like an international window and half and half. You could have two domestic windows a year, two international windows a year, but that is kind of sacrosanct, and every domestic game is you've got the access to the best players. Every international game you've got access to the best players. And you could, like, if there were, and this is going back to what I said about CVC the other day, the main potential benefit from CVC for rugby fans like us is if they do manage to buy sufficient rights to allow there to be a rugby channel and a one-stop pay-per-view. So I could watch Goode and Cruis and Freddie Burns and all the rest of Ben Smith and Kieran Reid in Japan. I'd definitely watch some games like that. Yeah,
I would.
I'd watch Super Rugby AU, Super Rugby Arthur. If I've got the time,
if it's not conflicting with other things.
But also if and the Japanese league doesn't have this, but Super Rugby Aotearoa last year definitely had it. If you've got the right narrative around the league and the right story, like Tim, you often talk about around storytelling. Tell me a competition that had better storytelling than Super Rugby Aotearoa last year.
That was one of the best tournaments I've seen.
Awesome. Is it 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Really short window. They're all domestic rivalries. They're all auditions for the All Blacks. Like, and it came down to the final game week.
I could definitely see that. But on the other hand, I do like... So I think you should have no more than eight international games, no more than 16 maximum club games. That's sort of where I'm at.
I could go for a little bit, but I'd like it. Yeah.
Imagine if you played all the club games and all the international games. I mean, that's one hell of a lot. I mean, that's what the lads are already playing.
Well, the 30 games a season is the limit on the international players.
The weird part is that due to the circumstances, the Pro 14 slimmed down the scale of their competition and yet still ran it at the same time as the Six Nations, so that the final happened at the weekend just gone, and now there's no rugby. So you've got this big empty window when the focus could have been on the Pro 14, but they did it whilst the Six Nations was on. It just makes no sense.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating today that the Pro 14's over. Found this out from Phil over WhatsApp.
Well, the Pro 14 actually ended today, even though the final was yesterday, because the final game was a rearranged...
Is that why they were playing?
Was it Dragons v Edinburgh?
Yes.
What a game to finish the season, Dragons v Edinburgh.
I was like, are they playing a spoon? I mean, didn't know what was going on.
So that is a bit weird because it was like parallel. The crescendo to the season was parallel to the Six Nations.
What if a Scottish team had got into the final?
Well, there would have been other negotiations around who was available. Because obviously the negotiations were with the Premiership, but it would have been with the Pro 14. And I suggest...
Well, the Pro 14 is owned by the unions, isn't it? So they go, off you go, boys.
I suggest that either the final would have been pushed back or the finale of the Six Nations would have been pushed back.
And they don't have the inconvenience of fans, do they?
Not
so
the
they
moment.
They don't need to worry about them.
The logistics and stuff. Yeah.
That is a bit of a farce, though, that scheduling.
It is a bit of a farce. And it meant they don't take it
seriously.
Well, but then you've also got the Champions Cup next weekend. So it meant that actually Leinster rested.
Oh, no, he
pretty
didn't.
Much all, not quite all, because Henshaw and Hugo Keenan played of the Leinster starters, but pretty much all the other Leinster starters from Ireland were on their bench, all not
what
playing.
A joke.
Whereas Munster did play CJ Sander, Omani, Conor Murray.
Oh, so they won then?
No, Leinster still won.
Oh, right, okay.
Leinster ground out pretty boring. Pretty well, no. Depends on what kind of game. You would have loved it, JB. It was brutal, physical, very stop
Tell
start,
you what,
lots
one
of scrums.
Of the best games this season that I've watched was Munster Leinster. It's
always a good game because it's all like the rivalry. Both believe that they are the best team in Ireland, should be the best team in Ireland.
I don't know if Munster do believe that now. Like Leinster have got the hold on them, and you can see that.
Leinster have the...
Munster played inside themselves. They did loads of one-out stuff.
In terms of Aotearoa, now that's a tournament that I would watch. If the Pro 14 switched itself so it had like the Ireland Conference, the Welsh Conference, then you can do whatever you want in there, but then you send a winner up to a Pro 14 playoff. Now I'm interested.
Well, so one of the reasons why this season has been curtailed is because starting in about 3 or 4 weeks' time is the Rainbow Cup.
Now, is that to thank the NHS or for the LGBTQ+ community? What is this for?
Well, I actually looked up the Rainbow Cup because I'm obviously a big Nintendo fan. And there is, of course, Rainbow Road in Mario Kart.
Of course there is.
Yeah, next year it's the Mushroom Cup.
Oh, is it?
The Flower Cup, the Star Cup.
Nice.
And Rainbow Cup was not a Mario Kart, certainly not a main canon Mario Kart tournament. However, it has been a tournament in two Mario Tennises, and also the Namco-made Super Mario GP arcade game and Super Mario GP 2 had a Rainbow Cup.
Well, I never knew that.
So,
thankfully.
Hopefully Nintendo are suing the Pro 14 for copyright infringements.
Oh, well, actually, I want to talk about suing some Rugby Cups later.
You know, didn't Super Rugby do Marvel shirts a few years ago? Maybe they could do
Nintendo
shirts. Have, like, Connacht can be Zelda. Just have, like,
you'd love
that. Green.
Yeah, Connacht Zelda. Ulster, White, Boo.
I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea.
Munster would obviously be Mario.
No. Ulster could be like one of the best Nintendo games ever with Goldeneye.
Yes.
So they could just be like white shirt with a black bow tie
nice.
On the jersey.
I thought you were going to say generic scientist from Facility in Goldeneye.
Yeah, that too.
Non-playable character, 6. Yeah.
Munster can be Mario.
Yeah, Munster Mario, definitely.
Yeah, sweet.
But the Rainbow Cup, so that starts in a few weeks' time, which, because that includes the four of the South African teams, that will be probably a greater revenue driver because South Africa is a 55 million person country. So the TV revenue that will also bring will be pretty significant. So they've curtailed the Pro 14, they're going to have the Rainbow Cup between April and June. And that is, so the structure is a league tournament, 16 teams in a league, but each team only plays their 3 derby games.
Okay.
So kind of what you're getting at.
But then 3 other teams.
Yeah.
So Ulster will play Munster, Leinster, Connacht, and then I don't know what the other 3, I don't even think they've been named yet. But that's an interesting format tournament, because it's only 7 games long.
Where's qualification for Europe next season? Is that from the competition that's just gone?
I think it's competition that's just gone.
That's
why
they had to play the last game after the final. So,
yeah, of course.
This is going to very much depend, isn't it, how serious the teams take it. So if Leinster put out, you know, the kids, not interested. If they go full force and everyone goes full force, the idea of Leinster coming up against the Bulls or the Stormers. Or
yeah, I love that.
Okay, you've got that,
I'm interested.
Cool. Albeit, those two teams, it's arguably harder. Sorry, those two teams, those two leagues, Ireland and South Africa, it's harder because you play 3 of your games against the hardest opposition. Whereas if Ospreys, for example, get their act together, or Glasgow or Edinburgh get their act together, well, then they've got easier games on average.
So who are Glasgow and Edinburgh playing in all this?
Zebra and your beloved Benetton.
That's so unfair.
So they play 3 games that are...
Is it unfair, though? Because would you like to go and play the Stormers after having a bunch of walkovers against Benetton, Zebra and...
You get to the final.
Glasgow. And then, Leinster.
Yeah, it's battle-hardened Lions, Bulls, Leinster, Munster.
Just one little stat, because... we've got Europe coming up, so it's kind of relevant from that point of view, and we talk about players playing too much and stuff. I've got the stats here on how many players Munster and Leinster have used in the Pro 14 this season, a shortened Pro 14. Okay. Have a guess.
I'm going to say they've used more than two players per position, plus a few extras. Give me 42.
I'm going to say, I think it'd be more than that. I think Leinster will be close to 60.
Wow.
Munster, maybe just less than 50.
Munster 14. Munster 53.
Ooh.
Leinster 57.
57. Oh.
Wow.
So they've used more than three teams. Three teams at three and a half teams they've used.
Just trying to think if that's unusual or not.
No other club side could do that.
Wasn't Sale running on like a 32-man first team squad under Diamond a few years ago?
So the Diamond equation was 15 plus 15 plus 2.
So 32.
Yeah, so that's how he did it. Now, Exeter, Bristol, when they came up, I'm sure they had like 60 men. I wouldn't be surprised if they went through everyone.
Exeter, when they came up, because Exeter, they had a team that was like the nearly team for a few years that was not quite there. And then they still had all those guys on long-term contracts, like a 35-man squad. And they brought in another like 20 guys in the few-year run-up. Guys like Steenson and Tui and
Bath
Budgeon and
Skaysbrook.
Yeah, and so they had like, it was probably between 50 and 60 man squad the year that they went up.
It was a big odd number. I bet Bath go through. I don't think Bath have gone through as many as those two.
But then a lot of those, a serious chunk of them, will be academy lads who are getting the opportunity. But they're getting the opportunity to experience that level of rugby in a winning team, which is...
In a winning team, and, go on, then you can play against Dragons or Zebra.
Yeah.
Zebra.
A little trip away to Italy to...
Mind you, English clubs get to do that now against Worcester. Anyway, and we'll get onto the Premiership in a minute, but just a couple of bits of news to rattle through. England have... go on.
I'm just going to say one more thing about the Six Nations.
Yes.
I know it's your going on.
Not at all.
So, England, this is obviously a hugely disappointing tournament. So England, I noticed, looking at the Six Nations table, they scored negative points difference. Do you know when you have to go back, how far you have to go back to find the last time that England had a negative points difference?
No, but I'd like to try.
In the six or five nations.
All five, six. 1974.
I'll go 1988.
Tim, you are 1 year off. It was 1987 was the last time that...
The year of the very first World Cup. First,
yeah, the last time that England had finished the tournament. They did in the early 90s have a 0 points difference, but before that, even all the years of bad performances, when they dismantled the 2003 team and rebuilt and all the rest of it.
Did we speak
even the Andy Robinson years?
Even the Andy Robinson years. Positive. Every, because they get 40 or 50 points, positive point difference against Italy. So for them to erode that in four
and
of the
usually
games.
Either Scotland or Wales are a bit gash. And actually, that's as you pointed out earlier, that's one of the reasons it's good this year.
Did we speak last week about the Eddie Jones review, which is now ongoing?
Yeah, and I've got something on that. The Wales Online reporting that Warren Gatland is looking for a house in Twickenham.
Bye to that. Student digs. Warren Gatland taking over England would be the end of the world for every other international team. The road stops there. That's guaranteed World Cups for as long as you want them. How long would you like World Cups for? Do you like your World Cups?
I'd
take another World Cup or two.
If Gatland was interested and available, I'd go for that. I'd say that even if Eddie Jones had just had a really good World Cup, because I think that much of Warren Gatland.
Yeah, Warren Gatland would never stop. He couldn't stop winning. He'd probably get... I wonder if Sean Edwards would go back to Warren.
Back to country of his
Never
birth?
Never go back, though.
I don't know. Sean Edwards seems to like... He seems to be self-aware enough to know that his role is as a defence coach.
Yeah,
his role
is as
the best defence coach in the world. He doesn't have ideas above his station and try and get, say, a director of rugby job at Quinn's and mess it all up.
Or Wigan. Oh, wait.
Be a tough one though. Well, not a tough one. It would be great, but it would be the first time in his whole career that Warren Gatland has had as much choice. And it would. I wonder how he'd manage when he didn't have to. Because even when he had the success at Wasps, there was a finite squad. But he's got so many people, and sometimes having so much, you can't. Like you always say about NFL quarterbacks, you don't. If you have two, you've got none.
And that might be the secret to why. Seems like Scotland is so successful because they don't have much choice.
The team picks itself.
Yeah.
So there's no doubts over.
Guess we're gonna have to get rid of Finn Russell.
And maybe it means that you, although Gatland did, I don't know whether Gatland. Well, I don't know actually. I was going to say maybe you pick the system to fit the players rather than have your philosophy on rugby and then find players to fill it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
One of the things so. Eddie Jones did an interview with Dylan Hartley on the England rugby feed this week. And one of the things he talked about was the... Obviously, he spoke about the change in the team, but he also spoke about the direction of travel of the sport itself, and certainly with an eye to France 2023. And he spoke about fast ruck time, fast game, quick pitches, the way that Super Rugby AU, Super Rugby Aotearoa is going with the high skill set, fast ball, huge amount of ball in play time, the way that the referees are going, moving things in that way, trying to keep the game sped up.
It's what World Rugby want, isn't it? That's what they want.
Yeah. And it was like a hint that that's what they're focused on, and they will be changing the team with that in mind, which to me suggests that they will be going for... Having heard him say that, I would not be at all surprised that if the next England squad had both Sam Simmons and Marcus Smith in it, which the internet would go wild because that's seemingly what everyone has demanded for the last 6-12 months or so. But I'll be interested to see if I'm just adding two and two together and getting five, or if that is what he actually does.
We'll see. Just a few bits of news. Again, we don't need to talk about these in depth, just to pin them to the list of things that we need to keep an eye on. England have switched the tour from the US to the UK. They'll be playing those sides here, I believe. Sky appear to have pulled the plug on their Pro 16 deal, and it will stay at Premier Sports, is the thought.
That's good, because I've just cancelled my Sky Sports subscription. Although it would be helpful if F1 could go to Premier Sport as well.
I've still got my Sky subscription, because I enjoy watching the England cricket, one day internationals and T20.
I'd sign up for Sky F1 today. It's paying £18 a month for F1.
Is that just purely F1?
Just pure F1.
That is quite a lot.
That's quite a lot, isn't it? Yeah. For sometimes one race a month.
I've got Sky Sports and try and forget about how little I actually watch it.
Yeah.
Just ignore it.
Maybe I'll review after the Lions.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Amazon may share... Initially, it was thought Amazon were going to share one third of the Six Nations with BBC and ITV, so they'd do an even split. One broadcaster would have one game each weekend. But actually, Amazon may just focus on the autumn internationals and it may stay terrestrial. Scotland are looking at potential games this summer. They're going to play Japan at Murrayfield, but there may be a development match against England. So basically like an A-side again returning. I wish the A-side...
Yeah, A-side had been a regular fixture for England.
Yeah, and they might play Romania, Georgia or Spain.
Very nice.
Or some of those. So.
In Madrid?
Don't know about that. And Portugal beat Spain. And I was looking at that fixture and I'd watched the highlights and I was looking at the weather and the sort of surrounds and I thought, tier two tour potential in Portugal.
Lisbon or Madrid.
Although we'll never be able to travel again, so...
One day.
Yeah. If we're good in Wales, Mark Drayford will give us our TV back and that's about it.
I don't want to get into it. I'm so demoralised. I think demoralised is the word. I am so demoralised.
Agreed.
But
what does keep me going is the Premiership. Are you ready to talk about Premiership?
Wait, can we talk about one more thing from internationals?
Of course we can.
Finn Russell got a red card.
Oh yeah. How do we not talk about this?
Because all he was just trying to do was change the behaviour of the tackler, right?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to broaden this out. Yeah, let's touch on Finn Russell, but I'll broaden this out into, because I wrote down, just as a little note, a question to ask, cards. Is it that people aren't changing the behaviour, quote-unquote, change behaviour, fast enough, and therefore will the number of cards, because it's not just international rugby, club rugby, we've seen loads, will the number go down, or is this the new normal?
New normal, 100%.
So I think it will go down. I firmly believe it will go down. If you incentivise it, things will change. And there was an interesting stat comparing the number of tackle penalties given away in last year's Six Nations, which for a lot of the players was a shift in the way that the tackle law was refereed, to this year's Six Nations. Last year's there were 92 penalties given away in the tackle. This year there was 27 penalties given away in the tackle. So there's a marked drop off in, well, penalties, which does suggest there has been a change in behaviour from last year to this year. Because certainly I don't think there was any change in the way that they were refereed.
Okay. So my view on that is that this is the new normal, and the way it would change is a little bit more complex, I think. So all right, so let me just get my head straight here. I don't think that players are going to change their behaviour, because I think the incentive of winning a game is stronger than the incentive of avoiding a card. So if your successful defence is predicated on getting off the line incredibly quick and absolutely annihilating people, but that does result in a 10% error rate, well, that 10% error rate is worth it in order to, you know, win games, because, you know, that's what you've got to do. You can't be seen to be giving away yardage or, you know, whatever it is. Now, if those cards start trending down, I think it's because the incentives for players to carry on hitting people as hard as they can, roughly chest height, because that's effective, becomes normalised again. And as it becomes more normalised, referees don't enforce it as strictly as they possibly did. But otherwise, I can't see how this drops off. And I would be interested to see in that tackle stat how many tackles, in the same way that the ruck is 1 week officiated very, very hotly, and the next week not so hotly, if we looked at those tackles and said, oh, actually, there's a few there which would have been penalised last year, but this year haven't been.
So on Finn Russell, I will say that he is an incredible athlete. And
is he?
No, he is. He is. No, like in his spatial awareness, his reaction times and things like that are higher than pretty much anyone else in world rugby. He'll be at the very top of those.
He could be a fighter
pilot. Of those metrics.
Yes.
Yeah. Of those particular metrics, no one sees things as quickly and as naturally and has that sort of body awareness as Finn Russell. He'll be amazing at that. And so, Finn Russell, I read what happened with the tackle that Brees Doolan put in on him. I read that as Finn Russell is so aware spatially and body awareness that he calculated in microseconds, you know, involuntarily, that if he didn't put his arm up, he was going to get walloped head to head.
Yeah.
And I almost think it's like, you know, when you touch a hot plate, when you touch a hot flame, automatically, without even consciously thinking it, you move your hand away. I think there was an element where that was unconscious self-defence, if you like. It was Finn Russell wasn't trying to get a competitive advantage. Oh, look, I'm going to push Doolan away. He was, I'm going to stop my head from getting cracked by Doolan's head. And so I'm not saying it wasn't a red. I'm just saying this is where I don't think that red card is going to change Finn Russell's behaviour one bit, because I think it was autonomous.
Yeah, I don't think
he had any conscious control over what he did.
And also, like, I kind of think if we're trying to change the behaviour of players to go low, maybe keep the behaviour of players that stand upright in the tackle and, you know... As a mitigating factor. Hey, you were high. You know, occasionally you do get elbows, you know, around the chest.
It's a little bit like if you cross the road not at a zebra crossing, fine, but...
Expect to die.
If a car's whizzing by and you don't quite spot it or you time it wrong, you're going to get splatted. Yeah. Don't blame them.
I saw someone crossing the A55 the other day. That was a terrifying experience.
were they playing chicken or were they just trying to get from one point to another?
I've had this, right? No word of a lie, I've had this on Princess Parkway coming into Manchester. A guy was sort of face on and he was trying to get in the way of cars on... On the way to Birkenhead Park, I think, to play an away game, and this guy was just going backwards and forwards. It's awful.
I remember being
some insurance scam.
No, I think it was die. I think he was genuinely. I don't know. He was just trying to. I don't know. If he was trying to show off or what. The guy had a death wish.
So back to Finn Russell. So I'm not saying it wasn't a red card, and I can sort of go fine. I would have been quite happy if it was a yellow or a penalty or nothing. Actually, I would have been fine with all those. I kind
these
of
get... standards don't seem to. I don't think.
No, I hear what you're saying.
Is it written down somewhere that but
my point is nothing's going to change because Finn Russell or any player would do the same thing to stop their own head being cracked open by
and
someone
also,
else's
I would
head.
Do the same thing in order to attempt a handoff.
Well, so I think he was, be it voluntary or involuntary, he was attempting a handoff. Now that
his palm was flat.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean it can't be a red card because if you miss and totally accidentally, if you intend to hand off and totally accidentally catch someone in the head with your elbow, that would be a red card under the laws. But I was actually frustrated with it. And I thought Wayne Barnes, besides that, was brilliant in the game. Obviously, fluent French for Advantage and
brilliant.
All the rest of it. But
quite wonderful.
He let the boys play. He did everything right. Even in letting some things go and doing some things wrong to allow the game to be quick. But I think he got this wrong. And this is actually the only card all tournament I think the referees have got wrong. From thinking back before, Peter Omani, Xander Ferguson, Bundiaki, Willems are happy with all of those being a red card. This just didn't quite feel right. And the reason it didn't feel right wasn't because of he was trying to hand off, because that can be a red card as well if you mistime it or get it wrong. It was more I think the initial contact was twofold. It was Finn Russell's left hand on Bryce Doolan's left shoulder.
With a flat palm,
but equally and at the same time, his forearm and his elbow went right across Doolan's chest to his other shoulder, which means that the initial contact was not the head and neck area, it was chest, and then it slid up. Now, in the old high tackle framework, there was an allowance for if the initial contact is lower and it rides up, that you can mitigate down or reduce the sanction down. So if it was a red card, it could go to yellow. If it was a yellow, it could go to a penalty kick only. If it's a penalty kick only, it can go to nothing. Now, actually, about 3 weeks ago, they changed the high contact framework. Sorry, the high tackle framework for the right reasons, because it's now a head contact process. Because the high tackle framework, obviously, is only for tackles.
Yeah.
This was the other way around. The perpetrator was the ball carrier, not the tackler. So it's actually quite convenient that they've now using this new process. However, that mitigating factor of sliding up doesn't appear, the initial contact and going up, doesn't appear on the new process. So I think probably or possibly Wayne Barnes was right because there was contact with the head, but it was after an initial contact with the chest. If you take the letter of the law of the new process, however, I think the new process is missing something that was clearly in the old process. And we all know the precedent has been set that if it is a tackle that starts on the chest and then the player slumps or if it rides up to the head, that is nowhere near as serious as one that starts on the head.
Yeah, completely.
So for that reason, I would have been happier if it was either a red card down to a yellow or even I would have been fine with a yellow card down to a penalty because I don't think the degree of danger from the initial contact.
No, I agree. It's Finn Russell.
High. I don't blame Doolan for being in pain because then after the initial contact or the second contact to the head, Finn Russell then does fall on top of him with his elbow in the head-neck area, and that did look pretty painful.
But it's very painful. It's rugby, isn't it? That's what they signed up to play.
It is.
It's a painful sport.
There's pain within the laws and there's pain outside of the laws. And this was pain on the boundary of the laws, but I just think it was the wrong call. It felt wrong to me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think I'm with you. There's one phrase we're hearing a lot just on the conversation of cards, the TMOs. We need to check this. There's quite a lot of that. And I don't have a problem with that per se, except to say that there seems to be quite a few things at the minute which happen repeatedly and regularly in games which are very randomly picked up on. And I find that quite frustrating.
Yeah.
When it comes from a TMO who's just, you could have come up with that same call.
I would quite
the last half dozen breakdowns.
I'd quite like it if the referee had to call the TMO in.
Well, the captain's referral that's being tried
in
Super Rugby Aotearoa, they have to give a specific That rook, there was head contact or whatever, net roll, whatever, or in at that point in time. And I can't remember if it's a use it or lose it type situation like cricket, but that seems to be, well, don't put it on the referees, put it on the players.
Yeah.
Because like, there's an element of, well, I know what we tolerate and what we're trying to do, so I'll be a little bit more relaxed if we've been given the rubber of the green kind of thing, whereas otherwise it is, because the inconsistencies is frustrating. And it's inconsistency both ways.
And when it costs you so much as well, the same thing over and over again, and then boom, it costs you a yellow card. Why?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On that particular occasion, the TMO says you need to have a look at that. For the type of incident which happens repeatedly through a game, I find quite frustrating.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand, just picking on one particular yellow card, Luke James against Wasps. So Josh Bassett was falling, and that was one of those situations where I think the tackle starts slower and slips, and then slips up, you said.
Initial contact.
And I only mention this because exactly what you said, it's been taken out of the framework, so the mitigation was no longer there for Luke James for the initial contact. And it was Josh Bassett that was falling. And I looked at that and I remember I watched that again and thought, if you were trying to change behaviour, if you were Alex Anderson, what would you sit down with Luke James and say on Monday? And I looked at that and went,
finish him.
Nothing. Because if Luke James goes low on Josh Bassett, Josh Bassett will just run around him. Because you have to stay in a strong defensive position. I'm sort of in the middle, and
I've got two things on that, right? Which is
go on.
If you want to change behaviour, God, I hate that phrase. It's so Orwellian. And the player hits low and then rides up. I kind of think you've achieved it. And you know, if that's what we're worried about now, hits sliding up.
2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah. You know. Fine. Yes. Right, so there's that. But on the other hand, if I applied the framework, I actually look at the Sam James one. I thought he was lucky not to get red because it is a forceful contact.
Was it Sam James, not Luke James?
Sorry.
Luke.
No, it's Sam James. It was Sam. Oh. It was Sam.
Did they both get yellows?
Yes, they did.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So Bassett... hang on. It's Luke James that Bassett... with Bassett.
Yeah.
And then Sam James later on. Did Sam James get one? Sam got one. No, he didn't.
Was it not Butch James?
Yes, Butch James, the dad. It was Luke James. It was one of the Duprees, I think. It was Byron, and God knows how St. AJ got a yellow card. I've never heard of him.
I think Pat Sanderson's been doing volleyball in practice with Sale Sharks. It's the only explanation for all these.
I honestly don't think AJ McKenzie has done anything wrong in his life.
I agree.
In his life.
But you were saying something about changing behaviour. Go on.
Yeah, so if the idea is changing behaviour and these players are hitting chest high and then riding up, I kind of think you've already... I mean, no one... Have you ever made a tackle in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tackles that you've made thinking, I can't wait to ride up in this tackle? It's just not... You know, you only think about where you hit. You don't think about riding up or riding down.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that. You'd never get that from some other podcast because they quit when they were 15.
I'm kind of optimistic about the changing behaviour. I don't like the language change of behaviour. I just like to think of it as incentives because I like incentives.
I like incentives.
Yeah.
Incentives are a good thing. If you incentivise it in the right way, things will change. And I do think that the Six Nations, the stark difference between 92 tackle penalties last year and 27 tackle penalties this year, it makes me more optimistic.
Mm.
Good. Well, on that positive note, let's shift to some of the games and let's start with that first v third Bristol v Quins. What a game.
Oh, I
what
love
a
it.
Game.
I that was it. An awesome,
it's one, it
awesome
might be the best game.
Game
of the Premiership this year.
Yeah, it's right up there.
Certainly that first half. Well, the whole game
well, the
was
whole,
great.
Because the finish, yeah, the first finish. Half was madness. The finish was crazy.
I can't work out, well, many things in this game. There's more questions about it than there were answers. So you know where I stand with Quins, which is they need to win against a top four team. And they have, actually. They've beaten Sale.
And they will look back and think, we should have beaten Exeter and Bristol away.
But this is the problem, right?
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Are they comfortable just being second best but saying, hey, we're really good, yeah, close enough? But you have to actually win, right? You have to win.
They stopped playing. This is the...
Oh, yeah, when they're setting up those rucks.
4 minutes to go and they just stopped playing. I think that's the takeaway. It's never let your foot off the gas. And we saw... who did it? Wales did it. Exactly the same against France. They just stopped playing.
The pressure gets to you. Like, I was watching... So, a podcast that we did... a few months ago, I think it was before Christmas, and we finished recording at about midnight, and I went home, and I just happened to open my laptop and onto BT Sport. It was the finals of the snooker. It was the deciding frame of the final of the snooker, a 35-frame decider, and the pressure was on. So these guys have been playing for hours. The pressure is on. This is a master title or world title, whatever it was. And that single frame took over an hour because of the pressure. Neither player could pot a ball because the pressure just built. And it's the same. There's a degree of that. Obviously, this game less important than the Wales game. But when the pressure gets to you, your body control is not as good as it used to be. Your thinking is not as clear as it should be. And everything falls apart. And I think you saw that with Wales a bit last week. And you saw it with Quins this week. Like I do agree with you, Jay. They had to win this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd make as greater assumption for their long-term performance, but they really had to win. And they could have won it, and they should have won it.
They should have.
Yeah. I mean, imagine a Quins team now with an Exeter win under their belt, a Bristol win under their belt.
Away.
They would be,
away.
Yeah.
Away.
They'd have so much swagger. They would be cruising to top four. And when they get to the playoffs, we're talking about a team there which are probably going to make top four. So a team, you say, these guys are favourites now because they can beat big teams, big games, and they've got the Sale win under their belt too.
Just the one phrase that Pat Lam uses all the time, trust the process.
Yeah.
He says that phrase, and the players say it all the time, and you see on their tweets that the players put out, the number of times they put out hashtag trust the process, and it's clearly been drilled into them so that the last 2 weeks, conversely, unlike Quins, the last 2 weeks, they've been points down and come back. And in this particular one, against Quins, 12 points down with less than 10 to go. And they just switch into, they stay on processes, not thinking about
exactly
all the
stuff
you're talking
not
about.
Letting the pressure build and not letting that affect their clarity of thought or their clarity of control.
Yeah, it was such a weird game because the way it flowed too. When they came in for half time, I was thinking, yeah, there is, 4 points difference? Because Quins went for the kick, didn't they? They didn't go to the corner, so they came in 4 points behind.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it's only 4 points, and I'm sure Quins can think of some nice things to say to each other. But I would be more worried now because I know I can't contain Bristol. Because every time Bristol got the ball, they would score, and then Bristol would play wide, and their hands were. I mean, that score from. Was it Byrne who gave a little tip pass
to Atwood?
Oh my!
Well, that started.
Oh, no, the Atwood. The Atwood was the
Atwood. It started under his own post. Marcus Smith hit a penalty shot, which hit the post, came down. Atwood got it, and unlike any other second row, and this isn't Atwood. If Atwood had been playing for Gloucester or Bath previously in his career, he would have gone head down, trucked it up. But because he's playing in this Bristol side, he looked for the space, and from under their own posts, a lock stepped, went. Gave the ball, and then a couple of minutes later, he's being given a little pop pass.
Was it a knock on? It looked like
Fitzharding's the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Fitzharding one was, no, hang on, that's another one, I think. Fitzharding was second half, right?
No, that was first. He'd just come on
end
after
of
20
yes,
minutes.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I love that try. I thought that was the best try of the day because it's off a ruck. You've got two players. The angles are fantastic. The hands are fantastic. Against a set defence, and they rip through them and score. I think, oh my God, like how on earth? I mean, people talk about Semi-Radrand. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in getting your forwards off in that. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well, the point, they're all doing it. Yeah, Randrandra is just a freak with his offloading ability, but they're all doing that, get past the contact and then lift.
So that was so I'm thinking now, Quinns obviously can't contain Bristol. They are done. Even though they're only four points behind, they can't second half and they completely contain Bristol.
Yeah,
this is brilliant. They're showing that they can score. They've shown that they can adjust. They've seen what's in front of them. They've changed their game plan. They're now containing them.
They were kicking a lot more. Danny Kerr and Marcus Smith were kicking brilliantly.
No, the Esterhazen try, which wasn't the one. He didn't score. I think he offloaded.
Yeah,
that was unreal.
That was cool.
Yeah, but the Quinn. What I loved about Quinns, which this will give them heart towards the end. In that first half, they had three or four, early on in the game, three or four kickable penalties in and around Bristol's 22. And they kicked all of them for the corner. And you thought, Bristol are going to hold them out here. Bristol will stop this, Bristol will stop this. No, Quinns trusted themselves to do it and crashed over. You're like, right, this is going to... Quinns know they can take them up front, or at least match them up front.
So, I don't know what the stats are after this game, but before the game, Quinns had the highest scrum win percentage in the league, 98%.
That's interesting.
And up until yesterday's game, they'd not missed a single line out in like four games. 52 line outs in a row.
Yeah,
they'd got. Their basics are solid.
They're going to miss Baldwin a lot, you know. So throwing, I mean, like, for how long have they had three hookers who, if you merged together, you'd get one?
Yeah.
Well, Baldwin is basically that. He might not be as good as, say, Dave Ward at sevens, but, like, he does...
he's a big old lump. He solidifies that scrum, which obviously have been Marler and Vilko Lowe on either side of you. Also helps solidify it.
Yeah, I like this team now, but I have a feeling... Here's my prediction for Quinns. I think they're going to get caught by someone else and miss out on top four now.
So they did it, was it last season or two seasons ago?
Northampton are behind them.
Tigers.
No, not having that.
Tigers is my call.
No.
Wow, no. Put it on the whiteboard.
Although just Miles Benjamin shirt.
It's already got Tigers on it.
Yeah.
Dovetailing the two games together, I will say that Marcus Smith did some great things. George Ford did some things that had Marcus Smith done them, people would have been absolutely going nuts. Oh, he needs to get him in the England squad. Look at that kick.
Well, I mean,
George Ford is so class.
Funny enough, right? That's exactly what they would say. And that's why George Ford is in the England squad.
I mean, I know.
You literally nailed it.
But I know exactly what you mean, because a couple of years ago, it was the same with Cipriani.
Yes. And, exactly that. And
don't get me wrong, Cipriani does some amazing, miraculous stuff.
I'd like to have Mark Smith in the squad, for the record. But
As would I, and I think it will happen sooner rather than later. Yeah. That's my prediction. Marcus Smith will be in the next England squad.
But the shiny new toy, and particularly a younger shiny new toy, always gets...
look how good his hair is.
Yeah, his hair is magnificent. He's like an anime.
I still like George.
He's like an anime character, isn't he?
I like George Ford far more for Tigers than I do for England. I think for Tigers, you see the whole range of his skills, and he looks good.
It's interesting you say that, because I don't think you did see the whole range of his skills today.
No, not today.
You're right, under other circumstances you do.
But that's because you get so much less time at international level, which is why...
Because he's kicking everything. I mean, that's not a bad thing.
I was going to say, ask James Lowe about the step up from club to international rugby.
No, what I mean by that with George Ford is, I think other coaches would say, right, George, just go and play. But because he's in England, he's got so many other options. He's got Farrell at 12. You know, you don't need George Ford. Like, Leicester Tigers literally have nobody else but George Ford for the last 2 years. He has single-handedly won them games. He had to, otherwise they get... smashed every single game.
Single-handedly still... kept them up a few years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If it wasn't for George Ford and Nigel Ray, Leicester would be in the championship.
Yeah, exactly. So George Ford basically, how would that negotiation go? We're going to pay you a lot more money, but you're going to be our only player.
loved the Bristol game.
Yeah, so good.
What a finish! What a performance!
For the record, I was stood directly behind, like you could draw a line from me sat in the stands over the assistant referee's head to the ball when Kyle Sinclair grounded it, and the angle that the assistant referee was looking, I was looking directly over him, and you could 100% see that Kyle Sinclair grounded the ball.
Interesting.
Because some people
A notable mention for Moynihan at fullback.
Morahan.
Morahan.
thought he was bloody good. Considering he's the third choice fullback for them.
Yeah.
He was class.
He was class. He is class. Do you not remember his try against the Lions in 2013? He is a quality player.
So elusive, isn't he?
Yeah. And Bristol had... It wasn't all plain sailing. They lost Nalaugo. Was it in the warm-up? You were there, Tim.
Yeah,
relatively shortly before kickoff. They lost Lua Tua, their captain and influential leader, and adds a hell of a lot of bulk to what's otherwise a fairly lightweight back row in Earl Thomas and
Earl did not have his best Harding. Game. That's a guy who did not have his best game.
Nor did Randranda, to be fair, although he still does some world-class things.
Randranda more and more reminds me of the guy who plays for Australia on the wing.
Corabetti.
Like, incredible moments. Like, unmatched world-class moments. But also loves to throw the ball away, make horrible mistakes and throw it into touch.
Randranda, because the whole narrative in comms, I don't know if you picked this up, Tim, because you were there, not listening to it like us.
No, blacks. I have it in my ears. I was listening to it as well.
It was.
I listened to that and like directors going, camera 9 ready, and camera 9, and yeah, and all that. So there's other little things. So I hear a little producer saying, "Let's get the citizen. Let's do the citizen thing or way or something." So there's a little time. If you look at the clock, every now and again, a couple of times a half, a little citizen bit of branding will pop up by the clock.
Yeah.
So I have all that in my ears as well. But yes, I heard the commentary. What was your point, Phil? Sorry.
The point was so Randranda did unbelievable things. His offload for the Piers O'Connor try was, it was exactly like Sonny Bill Williams. It was like blow for blow like Sonny Bill Williams.
Yeah.
His one-handed offload, the threat that he poses just by him being Semi Randranda on that pitch, three players will honeypot towards him because they know how dangerous he is. And all of that got talked about in all of its glory for most of the 80 minutes. He didn't actually have his best game, and none of that really. Okay, occasionally there was he's human as well. His mistakes. I mean, he actually could have got yellow carded in the first 20 minutes because he dived over like three rooks. He was like hands in when there was no hands in,
and he did a missed three into touch.
Yeah, he got turned over a couple of times. Now, even with all that negative stuff, I'd still much rather have him on the pitch for my team than the opposition or anywhere else.
Would you rather him or Esther Hazen?
Oh, can you imagine the two of them together?
I'd probably still have...
I'd have Randranda.
Well, it depends on the team.
I'd have Esther Hazen every day of the week.
I'd rather have Randranda and Piers O'Connor than Esther Hazen and Marchant.
Marchant's letting me down a bit there. But I'd have Esther Hazen... I'd just have Esther Hazen.
Esther Hazen and Randranda.
Yeah,
Esther Hazen and Randranda is insane.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous. That would be my best of those four options.
In the Premiership, I'm not sure you could pick a better sense of partnership.
Sam James and Luke James.
Oh, yeah, you could, yeah.
I love Randranda. I'm so glad he's playing in the league. I did think the commentary was a little bit one-eyed, as in they only highlighted, if you're going to talk about Randranda all the time, you have at least to recognise occasionally when he does something wrong.
Yeah. The one thing which I feel a bit bitter about, really, is I just wish we could see this Bristol team at its absolute best against a Saracens team. And the fact that we're missing so many players from the Premiership because they're playing Richmond just thinks, if there's a top three now of Exeter, Saracens and Bristol. My word.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty tasty, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it just?
By the way, Cornish Pirates lost away to Doncaster. So.
Oh dear.
So Saracens are now second.
Oh, are they?
So Ealing got like a 70-point win over Hartbury.
Yeah. So it's all basically on an Ealing Saracens showdown.
Come on, Ealing.
Home and away games. If we're able to go to games for that, let's go to that.
Yeah, we should do. We'd
love to do that.
That'd be cool.
Which other game? Let's talk about the Sale game, because...
Oh, do we have to? This is one of those times where if you could give both teams 0 points, that's what you do.
What? It was incredible.
No, it was not incredible. It was
No, actually, inept. Let's talk about the Bath game. That's it
was yeah.
Let's do Bath.
Just say on Sale, and it was like they need Panini sticker books to come back, because it's like they're trying to go around collecting cards.
they were ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what is going on there. I mean, like, you know, I was saying half-heartedly before, like, AJ McGinty's a saint. No, I really mean it. Like, he's just a saint. He doesn't do anything wrong. When he's getting yellow cards, I've got no idea what is going on. But somehow...
A lot of heart to come through. Although, what? Like, talk about Quinn's having that mental block, or Wales last week, you know, when the pressure came on. What, Wasps just mentally shot?
Yeah, well, they've lost so many games that they last season they would have won, and this just another
example.
Well, they
needed to go down the middle, didn't they? Because when you watch them passing the ball, which they do so beautifully against Sale's 13 men, Sale are so hot getting across the field because Wasps like to play it wide, and actually they didn't need to do that. They could have cut straight through the middle of Sale.
Well, the touchline is your extra defender, and Wasps just played into it, didn't they?
Yeah,
that'll hurt. Well, particularly, and I think it was pointed out in commentary at the time, and I think it's absolutely bang on, a confident Wasps side, or a Wasps side last year or before this run of bad games, would never have taken that penalty when they were deep in Sale's half, when they were down to 13 men, and they extended it to a six-point lead. That's when they'd go for the jugular, when they were 3 points up.
Yep, I completely agree with that.
And they didn't, and it just piled the pressure on, because only six down... Sale could then kick territory, pin what Wasps in.
I wonder how much of that is down to an old head at fly half saying, OK, look, we'll just take the points, we'll be sensible, we'll play the percentages. Because they started kicking the ball. I couldn't believe it. They started kicking the ball and it's 13 men. And I think if you have a Charlie Atkinson on or a Jacob Umanger, they probably don't play like that.
You've got to run it.
Yeah, they run it.
Because they're fearless.
And it's not that I don't like Jimmy Gopper. I love Jimmy Gopper. I think he's brilliant. But maybe just... I don't know what happened to them.
When Jimmy Gopperth was a key part of the team that was playing the way that would have won this game last year.
Yeah. But absolutely.
Because, I mean, if your 10 starts running around with the ball, you've got to follow him. You can't just say, no, don't do it.
You're on your own.
Yeah, see you later, kid. But, you know, Sale's resilience is remarkable. They played for 20 minutes at least with 13 men.
Yeah, was it four yellows in that second half?
Yeah. Four in the space of 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Also, some of that is minus. The Byron McGuigan one was interesting because Byron McGuigan is a master at interceptions. Like, usually when he goes for it, he gets them. I think he might have topped the league one year for interceptions. He absolutely nails them. But he just got it wrong. Mm. And also, whatever happened to the standard of knocking it up versus knocking it down? Does that no longer matter now?
So the law is, it's not a deliberate knock on it. I mean, it is because that's the wording, but that's not how the law is written. It's, you've got to be in a reasonable position to catch the ball. So whether you knock it up, down, sideways or what, if your one hand fingertips, you're not in a reasonable position to catch the ball, no matter where you knock it.
I don't know. I kind of think the best person to judge if they can catch a rugby ball, would be the professional rugby player who tries to make to make that catch, because that's their job. But okay, I see that. It used to be, didn't it, if you slap it down, it's gone.
Yeah. That would still be, because you're in no reasonable position to catch the ball.
You throw it up in the air you're trying to get hold of it. I don't think that's a reasonable.
And I would probably be with you on that, because
the only reason they're tipping it up is to try and then catch it.
Yeah. And also, so a lot of them are. It's kind of like a block that you don't know where it is. You're just trying to get your hand in the way. So you've got no time to react and try and grab anything.
AJ's is definitely a yellow.
That's definitely, that is a deliberate knock-on, even though it's not deliberate, but you are in no position when you're blocking from a yard away. If you're 5 yards away or 8 yards away or 10 yards away, you've got enough time to make a decision, even if you can't get a full two hands to it. But you know that you're not just trying to get in the way or slap it down. You can consciously change the position of your hand to give you the best chance of catching it.
Tell you what, Sale are in good shape, you know, with the kids coming through now.
They've got some good kids.
Oh, Harper, who wasn't playing this week, maybe absolutely mega at tight head. Ewan Ashman came on, made a hell of a difference. Beaumont had his best game in years.
Who's not a kid? He looks a lot older than he actually... He's like 27 and he looks about 37.
I think he might be 30 now, Josh Beaumont. I think
he's a lot older than he looks, certainly.
Yeah, but, I wasn't classing Josh Beaumont as a kid before.
Bevan Rod.
Bevan Rod's and very good.
Doug Dale, I really like Doug Dale.
Cameron Neild's a guy who has just been revitalised. I thought Cameron Neild was due to go, to be honest. But Yeah, looks at ace now.
Well, if you're talking about good young players, let's jump on to Irish and to Saints.
Irish
v Bath.
Oh, what a game. I'm now going to say this. I think I would win more games with Bath than Stuart Hooper. I genuinely think that.
I'd love to see it.
I guarantee it. I would win. If I was in charge of Harlequins, I'd win exactly as many as those two coaches have currently won. And I know I'd do this because I know exactly what I'd do. I wouldn't show up.
You'd do nothing.
I would not show up.
So firstly, the context here is London Irish are a good team.
Yes.
And they're at home, right? So that's context number one. London Irish are no slouches and they're at home, where they perform better. Bath had two red cards. And it's one of those things, again, when we've had conversations before about certain games, what on earth can Stuart Hooper do about those two red cards?
I don't know at this point. But isn't that like his whole shtick? Like he's not the coach. He doesn't tell us to roll on the floor, and he doesn't tell you when to kick or when to pass. He's the cultural guy. He makes sure that everything, you know, is in place within the club.
He deals with global matters.
But for a man with like libertarian instincts and who likes personal responsibility, to sort of shift focus onto coaches when players, like England's players, do completely brain-dead penalties repeatedly, or they get two red cards. It seems incongruous.
I don't know if I'm going to address that directly because I don't think we need to spend too much time on that. I would just say that Stuart Hooper's performance at the head of Bath, I don't know if he's doing enough coaching to justify him taking the blame, is the honest answer. But I do wonder that, you know, should he not be making changes somewhere? Is it good enough just to be talking about what is globally important? He's got one of the biggest budgets in the league. He's got one of the best squads in the league. And they've lost more games than they've won.
I don't think Hooper's right. I've never quite liked him.
But I don't think... that's fine. But I'm just saying, coming to that conclusion after this game, I just think it's crazy.
Do you know the last game. The worst part about Bath, right, is I made a joke about this, but I do it now. I put bets on when they are 10 points up because I know they don't have it in them, which is ironic because they do have it in them. This is the worst part about Bath is, like, they will go up and they make it look so easy. Like, when they turn it on, they might be the best team with ball in hand when they turn on.
For the first 15 minutes of the game.
The first 15, they are like, they open up against Newcastle. Some sublime hands from Redpath to go in underneath the sticks. And this is a pattern that's repeated week after week after week after week. And I was talking to a Bath player a few weeks ago, and he's like, we're nearly there. We know teams fear our collisions. We know that, you know, we are good at what we do, but we just can't make it stick. And I don't know what it is, but... Where else would you point the finger at this point?
You're right. This game in isolation is... You shouldn't be calling for Hooper's head just from this game in isolation.
Because he sent his team out and they were looking like they were going to trounce Irish.
And maybe they would have done...
But they look like they're going to trounce everyone. This is their problem, isn't it?
Maybe they would have done if they'd not had... Well, two red cards and two yellow cards.
Yeah, so they've lost 8, they've won 7. Okay, so it's not a complete disaster for most teams. They'd say, okay, you know, it's a bloody hard league. But Bath are absolutely stacked with talent. Absolutely stacked. I can't help but think they tried to...
Well, we have the salary cap, which means they'll be one of a number of teams... They'll be one of a majority of teams that are spending exactly the same amount of money. So the talent they have kind of in their squad is irrelevant.
No, depends.
That's why there's a salary cap.
Okay, so not everyone spends up to the salary cap. But it's like
most do.
But like, where do they spend it? You know, if you're not seeing Toby Faletau for most of Six Nations, well, that was a waste of money. If you're saying I've got loads of England players and they all go to England, well, that's on you. You know what they are when you re-sign them and you give them more cash. The list of errors there just goes on and on. And I do genuinely think at this point that although I like to give Stuart Hooper a little bit of a kicking occasionally, because partly it's because it's quite fun because of all the cultural stuff, and I hate that stuff. But also, I think I feel a bit sorry for him because I'm sure he's not picking these sides. I'm sure he's not signing these players. Positive. Well, I mean, you can't talk about culture and all that stuff and then sign Danny Cipriani. Not that he's a bad guy or anything, but it doesn't fit in with what he preaches by any stretch.
Depends what kind of culture you're after.
That's a good point. They've re-signed Joe Cognacinga this week to an extension. Why? Who is making that decision? That's a ridiculous decision by any stretch.
He didn't look great this weekend.
He did not look great.
He won't be playing for England anytime soon. I mean, Cognacinga.
He won't be missing any games.
Ironically,
that performance has made him more valuable.
And it looks like Rocco's probably days are numbered.
Yeah, Rocco's gone. And here's the irony, right? So somebody in Bath is doing some bloody good work because they picked up McConaughey. They picked up Will Muir, who looks great. Like Max Clark looks like he can play. De Glanville, they've developed well.
De Glanville is class, I think. De Glanville is really, really good.
Someone is doing some bloody good work there. But on the other hand, someone is doing some... I mean, some of the stuff they do is just inexplicable.
Well, since we mentioned Big Joe, let's talk about some of the positives from this game. And that Irish back three is awesome.
Tom Parton. I'm all about Tom Parton at the moment.
Parton, Loader, Hassel Collins, they are all class.
I just look at Loader and I'm thinking, is he too skinny for international rugby? Or is that just a stupid thing to say?
Oh, he's fast, he's steppy. His first try where he steps through
force times acceleration.
Yeah.
Force equals mass times
acceleration. Force equals mass times acceleration, that's the one.
But the way he went around, the way he went underneath those sticks was awesome. That's unplayable.
His second try where he takes the ball, almost standing still behind him on the wing and then accelerates into the corner was awesome.
So I'd say the days of the Giants are numbered. Big Joe or one of those Irish back three, who would you have?
I'd rather have any one of those Irish back three. Who
would I have?
Based on Big Joe, I've seen him do some very good stuff in the past. He's come back from a very bad knee injury. I don't think he's playing his best rugby now. I don't think he had a terrible game. Did some good covering tackles, but I'd rather have any of those Irish back three, there's obviously
a place for big men, clearly in the forwards, but there is big centres is shifted from a big winger. So having one big centre seems to be, like Randrandra and Piers O'Connor are both big guys. Esther Hazen, as we've already mentioned, Rona for Irish, does that job. He is a big slice. He's a big old boy. You've got Van Rensburg or Tuilagi at Sale.
Or both on Sundays. Yeah, this Irish team, Big Luth, yes. They semi-impress me. I mean, let's be honest. If Bath keep their men on the field and they don't have a complete breakdown, they could have won this. But just come back to Paul.
But then Bath's two tries at the end were when Irish were down two men.
Yeah.
So it could have been a 15-point win for Irish.
So just back to Tom Paulson second.
Yeah.
You know, we have been throwing around like who might be the next fullback for England, and it could be him. It could well be him if he carries on his positioning. I don't know exactly how good it is, but it doesn't seem out of place. His attacking is absolutely electric.
I mean, he's so fast.
He is, isn't he?
Freeman's quick as well. Freeman for Saints, Parton for Irish, Stewart for Leicester. There's three young guys that are doing looking good.
You missed one for Saints.
Slight home.
Winger.
Freeman can play 15.
There are some options. Obviously, Luke James as well.
Yeah, but this is the conundrum that Eddie faces. It's a nice problem to have, but how do you pick which one of those is going to be your man, and then how do you stick with them? Because in 2 years' time, there'll be another five highly talented
which goes back to that point that when you've got so many, it must be hard to pick.
Yes,
and and again, there is a massive step up from club to international rugby, which is why the maximum amount of emphasis when we look at players to make the transition to both international rugby and or British and Irish Lions, the European games that are coming up should be where the focus is, way more than the Premiership, because as I said earlier, and not trying to be disparaging to James Lowe, who's a great player, ask James Lowe about the step up to international rugby. It's massive. And he would carve it up in the Premiership.
He'd do all right.
He would.
There's no two ways about it. There was a few other things I want to talk about in relation to Bath, because we haven't quite gone about them enough. I don't think Orlando Bailey was trusted enough with the ball. Did you feel that?
His first Premiership start.
Yeah, he did seem a bit quiet. Yeah. But Bath,
like, they were playing off nine a lot.
If you were head coach at Bath and you had an 18-year-old making his first Premiership start and you had Ben Spencer inside him, what would you do?
I would trust him to play, I think. Don't change anything.
But Bath played, certainly as they lost men later in the game, they just played a more narrow game.
Yes.
And if you look, because I watched the game and then I rewatched just the highlights of the tries, and all the Bath tries were, there was the Max Clark to whoever it was, slightly wider, but every other try was, it was a rolling mall. It was the tight forward work, and all the Irish tries were Ben Loader dancing through people, Parton going round people, Ben Loader in the corner, the Irish, Curtis Rona in the corner. Irish were trying to spread it wide, and Bath were, certainly when they lost men, trying to narrow it off. Now, I don't know how much of that is down to the 10, how much is down to the, how much they trust the pack, how much was down just purely to the cards. But I think Bailey, who's obviously, he's incredibly talented to get there, but he was a little bit anonymous in this game.
And 10s thrive off responsibility, don't they? You know, that's what they're there to do. And when you sort of cut them out a bit, I wonder if that can backfire sometimes.
Maybe.
Anyone got anything to say about Danny Cipriani signing?
We said a little bit.
He can be a fantastic player. It's a risk.
It is a risk.
It's a risk.
I don't think it was Bath's. Well, it certainly wasn't Bath's original plan. It wouldn't be my plan if I was in charge of Bath. I can see it working for a short period of time. I'm not sure. You're not going to build a dynasty on a 33, 34-year-old Danny Cipriani. No.
So I'm going to make two separate arguments, and they're going to be absolutely counter to each other. Right?
You!
So on the one hand, what I'm thinking is it's a disaster. Because if it's not working in Gloucester with all of his mates as coaches, like, what chance does Stuart Hooper have with the best will in the world? Just, you know, it's hard. Number two, if he does go well, I don't think the coaching staff get the credit because it's Danny Cipriani. Danny Cipriani did that.
He runs everything.
That's what he does. However, here's the other side, which is if your attack is not quite where it should be and you think, you know, you need to revamp it and your attack coach isn't having the biggest impact on the squad, maybe bringing in Danny Cipriani to run the attack is not a bad thing. And if you've got this young lad Bailey who's any good, learning behind him. So this is what I was hoping might happen, is Bailey has a good game and then sort of gets a bit of a reputation for himself and then is ready to hand off from Danny Cipriani. Now, I'm not sure if Danny Cipriani is the type of guy to bring a young 10 in.
They specifically referenced that in the press release.
Have they?
Yeah, that he will be kind of nurturing
mentor.
The talent. Yeah.
Because, you know, if there is a lot to learn from Danny Cipriani. He's not just a good, skillful player. He's bloody knowledgeable. You know, that's the other thing which you get. The downsides, though, I mean, you know, there are some downsides, without doubt.
Would you do it? If it was Sale and AJ goes and...
It depends on my brand.
Dupree goes.
Right, and I don't mean that flippantly. It really does depend on my brand. If I am building something... You know, I don't think that Alex Sanderson does it. Let's put it that way. I don't think Mark McCall does it. I don't think Mark... Can you imagine Rob Baxter doing that?
No
chance.
Exactly.
Not even close.
But you could imagine, because he's done it already, someone like Steve Diamond doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he did it. He brought Sippers back, didn't he, from Melbourne?
Because that's the sort of brand that they've got, and he thinks that he can take... I mean, he thinks he can take on difficult players and get the best out of them. And you'd argue that he relaunched Danny Cipriani's career. So it depends on what my team is, what my budget is, what I'm saying to everyone. I wouldn't want to be saying, look, we're building from within and we're about this, that and the other. By the way, here's Danny Cipriani. I don't think that works.
Yeah, if you were Bath then, because I get the point of what team, and certain teams would have him, certain teams would not. If you were Bath in this situation, would you have him?
No.
Yeah. I.
That said, I think he's going to look wonderful in their kit.
He'll look great in the kit. My big concern here is, and I've said this before, but... Cipriani, when he was at Gloucester, he played his best rugby early on when he had a sniff at getting more England caps. And that actually did lead him to a couple of caps in South Africa. And when that carrot was taken away from him, that seemed to be the beginning at the end at Gloucester. And I just can't see that carrot coming back, the England carrot. I really, really think he should have gone to France or Japan. And his carrot should have been, making as much money as Danny Cipriani can possibly make for the next 3 to 5 years.
I'd be 100% behind that.
I think maybe he's had a bit of a break, and that might mean that he can re-engage with the game as well, because you're right, he did lose something. I also think one thing that hasn't really been mentioned, what are Gloucester fans thinking? They're going, all right, you need to leave the game, do you?
Yeah.
And you're going to come back a little bit later with our big rivals. All right, yeah. Cheers, Danny.
No worries.
Yeah.
I think they're probably... Well, knowing what he's done...
Well, they're getting out of Hastings, so they won't care for next season.
Yeah. Knowing where he's gone, I think they'd say good riddance now. Not that they don't appreciate what he, you know, when he was playing, but they did everything they possibly could for him. And if he wasn't playing well, you know, they're probably better off saving the salary. And maybe if Danny Cipriani left my club the way he left Gloucester, I would want to send him to my local rivals.
One final thing on Bath, just to touch on something I've said a long, long time ago. I just think they need to be more uncomfortable, and I think they need to get out of Farley House and get down to Lambridge on the bog and just start being a spit and sawdust, concrete changing rooms. They need to be uncomfortable.
Do you think they should play their home games at in Oxford?
The Kassam Stadium.
In the Kassam Stadium.
Yeah. They just need to be uncomfortable. Because they're just, top 2 inches, they're not hard enough.
Mm.
Saints, though, like again, exhibit C for this podcast on the Giants are out of fashion now. Naira Voro is going to struggle to get back in this team.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
This is one of those results, as is most of the results last week, which just proves to me that the lack of relegation means that the league is devaluing.
Oh, big time.
Yeah,
and people
agreed.
People are so daft that they don't understand the difference between leagues devaluing and clubs devaluing. I heard an argument the other day saying that because the league is now closed, it is now technically more valuable, which is utter nonsense. The value of the league comes from the fact that the clubs are competing with each other. It's a competition within the league. The value of a club and the value of the league are two completely different things. You can have a very... Well, all the clubs in the Premiership are not particularly valuable, which is why you can pick up Leicester for next to nothing. That's why.
And it's a bit like that phrase when you say someone knows the cost of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah. The idea that... Now the league's closed, they can afford to invest, the league's more valuable. That's not how it works. The league is valuable because of the competition in it, which includes relegation. It's not to say a league without relegation can't be more valuable in the future, like the NRL, but it's not the same thing. So this Worcester result, basically the way that Gloucester have been picking their team, all of the home wins last weekend are showing now that some teams are going, not going to happen. Just not going to happen.
Well, even Exeter, they fielded really
close
to a and in some places third team not right across the board, and they still had some experience in there, but this is not a normal Exeter team. And they didn't even have, like, when they were fielding their B team last year, they had some experienced guys like Dave Dennis and Dollars and Steenson, who like brought real like proper experience, leadership experience. And they were winning game like Dollars running round Semi Randrandra to beat Bristol last year.
Easy.
I mean, this team would not have beaten Bristol. I mean, they lost to Gloucester.
Hmm. So I'm in two thoughts on this game. My two thoughts are, my overwhelming thought, I must say, is that have Exeter earned the rights because of where they're on the league to play?
So, 100% they have, but that's... I guess you could argue that they might have done that because even in a competitive league, they would have already earned the right to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But it's just an example of the uneven teams. Because had that Exeter team played the Gloucester team from last week rather than the Gloucester team for this week,
they would have won.
Exeter would have won, and it probably would have been a pretty close game.
Did you see how many debuts that Gloucester gave to lads last week?
Yeah,
four debuts, starts, and you just don't do that in a
single game.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what I mean. The league is worth more with relegation, because at the moment, well, not at the moment. When we get to the end of the season, we will not have that Newcastle Leicester game, or what, you know, we will not have the end of season drama. Why people can't understand this is beyond me, absolutely beyond me.
Yeah.
Anyway, preaching to the converted here. Just a quick shout for Paul Hill and his chip and collect. Outrageous.
Paul Hill, the prop.
He was the prop idol for this week. We had Jeff Tumanga Allen the other week doing
the 30-yard gas and out the back. Gas
and Paul Hill's prop idol skills were outrageous.
Yeah, he's a good player. I like him a lot. I'm a little disappointed he hasn't pushed on to be an England player. I thought he was when he first moved over to Northampton.
I'm sure he got in one of the early squads.
He did.
Did he?
Yeah.
Him and Kieran Brooks.
A good size to him. Like, he's a good shape.
Big boy. Yeah. Aaron Painter would be that.
And Hayes. And Joe Hayes.
Yeah, Joe Hayes. Who I need to see a bit more of. But, yeah. Do we learn anything from this game?
Well,
other than
my
fantasy rugby draft weekend was ruined by Ollie Slightholme.
Well, I learned something, which is sort of semi-interesting. But did you see the interview with Jonathan Thomas post-game?
Did he apologise?
No, he didn't. It was a written interview with the BBC. And he says he's losing 20 players at the end of this year.
Yeah, I did see that.
So that might account for why just everything is up in the air. And again, not to go over all ground for people that don't understand, but this is exactly why relegation matters. Because if he's losing 20 players, he doesn't want to be playing his 20 players, even if within those 20 players he has his best squad.
Yeah. But you've got to... If there is relegation, it matters. Whereas this... Nothing matters. The 20 players leaving.
Or on the flip side, as soon as relegation, not being a part of it, was decided, he went, right, get rid.
Mm. Well, he couldn't, because that's what, to a degree, Borthwick has done. He's cut contracts partway through the season.
They've been brutal.
Over
there. But, I mean.
So both Leicester and Worcester, well, Leicester up until now and Worcester moving forward, have behaved like a team that has been relegated and coming back up.
And this is sort of the free rider argument, isn't it? Which is they just devalue the league for everyone else. Because, you know, if you imagine the NRL or whatever, and they're all trying desperately to avoid the spoon, and actually, if they do play well and they do play their players till the end of the season, they still have a chance of, you know, getting to a playoff. Well, then it's different.
Because it's, well, and that does make a lot of sense, because it's a really tough market out there, and there might be the majority, maybe a dozen of those Worcester players, don't have a club to go to or have a much poorer standard of living, wage or whatever than they currently
the
have.
Lads, so I've got a list here of lads that might go, provided by a friend of mine. And, you know, looking, the lads are losing. They're not... I mean, they're guys with Premiership experience. One of them's Graham Kitchener. I can't imagine that.
Oh, he's from a very good family.
Great family. No, they wouldn't do that. Why would they do that? It makes no sense to me. But yeah, I've got a list of 20 players if you want to know them, or some of the players that
they're there any, we're probably aware of a few of them.
We know hoo-ha! Other than that, big names?
Well, you say big names.
Duncan Weir's gone, hasn't he?
So, Callum Black, Connor Kerr.
Ulsterman, Callum Black.
Don't go through them all, just tell us
Kitchener,
the big names.
Kitchener, Bresler, Merrick, Matt Cox, Matty Williams.
You're going through the whole lot.
GJ. Well, I mean, when you say big names in Worcester, I mean, you know all two of them.
So, like, Duncan Weir. Yeah.
Duncan Weir's one.
Yeah, we know Duncan Weir's one.
Scott van der Breeder, John O'Kittle, Hugard, Cornell Dupree. Cornell Dupree is a big name. He played for Scotland.
Mm. Okay. He's a Dupree.
I guess this is the problem.
He's the fifth best Dupree in the league.
Yeah, I think you're right. Is there anyone else on there? Yeah, so thank you to whoever you are who supplied this. You know who you are.
So I kind of apologise to Saints fans, because I'm sure you'd want to talk about some great attacking rugby, and there was some, but again, it's a little bit like talking about Pro 14 games sometimes. Well, if Worcester are going to play like that, I don't want to...
Yeah, and we didn't talk about all the amazing tries teams scored against Italy in the Six Nations.
No, we didn't.
So, no. Let's move on.
Just on that, so looking at the table, because I know we've got two more games, or we've got one more game to talk about.
We kind of touched on the two games, but we can touch on them a little bit more.
Just on the Jonathan Thomas thing, was he saying that by way of explanation for their poor performance?
Yeah, I've got a lot of turmoil, yada, yada, yada. Mm. And he's in a tight situation.
He's taking full advantage. He's doing probably what is required, given that relegation isn't a factor, but exactly what you said, it does devalue the whole league.
Well, the other thing you must remember as well is, for all the young kids he was playing, it wasn't them that let him down. It was Chris Ashton. getting a red card by, you know, firing headfirst into a ruck. So, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, and the last game was Newcastle-Leicester. So, before we go into this, London Irish and Northampton are the two teams most threatening to Harlequins. But I don't... I think London Irish have the potential to get a bit better. I think we know, broadly speaking, what Northampton are. The team I think are going to get better now substantially are going to be Tigers.
So Tigers have won the same number of games as Quins. Both won 8 games.
There's some COVID games in that,
COVID
though,
games,
isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's
a couple.
From just in pure league points, the difference is that Quins have got a lot of bonus points, both losing and try scoring, whereas Leicester have hardly got any of either.
So Leicester have done all this, right, in a very ugly way. You got, you know, like, and I say ugly, I was talking about the style of play there, but actually, well, let's go back a step. They're in an ugly way in terms of how they found out they've got some pretty good kids now, in the same way that...
I thought you were referring to the way that they have just chopped contracts midway through the season.
Yeah, there is that. There is that too. So, absolute bloodbath at Leicester with players going in and out. But I do genuinely think they have got a really good core of young lads now. I think Dan Kelly is legitimately great.
Dan Kelly's great.
Very good.
Stewart's great.
Potter looks good.
Yeah.
Van Portfleet, Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got these guys.
And the South African back row. The Liebenberg, Brink,
Visa, Brink,
and Visa. They're massive. Visa and Hanro Liebenberg particularly, they are awesome. Those two.
So to get this far, and now they're reintroducing all their England lads. I mean, I get one of their England lads is Tom Youngs, Ben Youngs. you've got Ford coming back for the rest of the There's no reason for George Ford not to play a single game now until the end of the season. That's massive. Genge is back. That's massive.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to make a real difference now. And I can just see them kicking on.
Nandolo could be back soon.
Yeah.
No, I don't see it.
I don't think they'll get top four, but I think they'll have a good run to the end of the season.
And they're so street smart too. I mean, they know when to kick. They get in the corner. They know what they are. They're not trying to dazzle anyone with expansive play or culture. They just bang it in the corner, and then they're going to beat you up.
And that's what this game was. There wasn't a lot of attractive rugby played in this game. It was two teams going toe-to-toe, because Newcastle will happily take that challenge all day long.
Yeah.
They've got a big, well-drilled, experienced pack.
And they're horrible. I mean, Newcastle are a horrible pack.
Yeah.
Who would win, by the way, Genge or Welsh in a fight?
I'm glad you asked this, because I think I know the answer, and it's not Genge. So, do you know anything about Welsh?
Welsh.
Welsh. Do you know anything about him?
He's a prop. Plays for Newcastle.
Did he have a great chip and chase a few years ago, three or four years ago?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So, here's just a little bit of trivia. I'm not saying it's going to translate to him decking Genge. Because Genge fancies himself as, you know, he fancies himself.
He had a flinch backwards when John Welsh sized him up.
And I tell you what, that was the shuffle forward, like the footwork, the way he lunged. That was a well-practiced lunge. He knew his distance, right? But John Welsh, I went to Glasgow just to have a look around the facilities and, you know, watch the players train and whatnot. And they've got a board of all their biggest lifts, and it's all John Welsh.
Really?
All John Welsh. The squats, the deadlift, the bench press. And
I've just looked at John Welsh repping out 200 kegs on the bench press.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was wondering, I wonder if Genge is, you know... So, allegedly, Genge said he was not in the best shape. I think that's what he insinuated. And then, I don't know how that escalated into two professional athletes squaring up, but I love the fact that they did. Now, that should be on the Premiership Twitter.
What? Those two squaring up?
Yeah.
Oh, make sure you tune in for this one. Should be tasty.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's a shame that he went off early. And that was a legal clear-out, too.
Yeah,
That was handled weirdly as well. I mean, maybe it's right in terms of the laws, but there was clearly an illegal clear out from the side, possibly with from the laws. But I actually don't hate that it was not a foul play clear out, but a bit weird that he didn't.
Penalty from in the side, yes.
Yeah, penalty, yes. But it's a bit weird that even though he's seen it, he couldn't then go back to. Well, yeah, it's a penalty because he let it go. And the TMO can only adjudicate on foul play, not indiscretions.
I think you're opening a can of worms if you start saying that someone going in at the side, a technical offence, is foul play, and you should... That's what a lot of people are saying, is it should have been a yellow or red card because John Welsh got injured. His ribs got hurt. He looked in a pretty bad way when he went off.
You can't
judge on outcome.
I'm not saying that. It's kind of, if you see it, however you see it, you should make the right call. Like, if you happen to get shown on the big screen and you happen to watch it, if you see something that is not within the laws of the game, you should take the appropriate decision once you've seen it.
I think once you pass a few phases, I haven't seen that.
You can't go back for a technical penalty necessarily. If you're looking back at was a try scored there, oh, hold on a minute, they only had that ball because of an illegal clear out. Just on one thing, and I sort of said we need to keep an eye out for it, and just reminded me because it was in relation to a card. Irish, I'm not going to say they milked it, but I'm also not saying they didn't milk it for some of those cards.
The Creevy one.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the one where he got hit in the back?
That was the Yules.
So, no, I know Yules hit him in the back, but who was the player?
Oh, good question.
I think the player who got in the way of Yules making the tackle should have got the card.
Because he didn't change his line or anything like that. There wasn't a blocking.
Well, he wasn't looking where he's going.
He was just looking at the ball, which he wasn't looking behind him to check where Yules was.
I just didn't get out of the way. get out of the way.
And also, the yellow card given to the Leicester prop as well. I just thought.
Hang on.
Are we giving yellow cards for this?
Sorry, I know we're going all over the show now, but let's just focus for 1 second on the Charlie Yules red, a second yellow red.
Yeah, yeah.
The London Irish player wasn't looking where he was going.
No, he wasn't. He was looking at the ball, which was where he was running towards. He wasn't looking behind him.
So he's in front of the ball, right?
Yes, because the ball's behind him.
Ball's behind him, so he can't receive the ball, but he's looking at the ball. But he's in my mind, he's in the way of Yules getting to that ball carrier, because Yules gets rid of him and then gets the ball carrier. I'm thinking, like, if Yules wants to throw this guy around because he's in his way on the route. So it's a game of rugby. Like, he didn't clothesline him out of the way. He didn't reach around, gallop him and throw him to the floor. Like, just push the guy out of the way. It doesn't matter if he gets pushed out of the way. What's wrong with the ball?
If you push him out of the way, it wasn't a push though, was it? It was a shoulder charge.
Oh, whatever it is. I mean, shoulder charge to the back, I just think, get a grip.
Well, actually, I had no problem with that being
I can see
a
that
yellow.
One being a yellow card. I thought the one in the Leicester-Newcastle game was a little soft.
Which one was that?
That was the where the steward tried, and it might just be because it might have cost me a fantasy rugby draft. Steward try got disallowed because the decoy line was being run by the Leicester prop, who they passed behind him. And all he did was sort of carry on his run, and he put his arm up. And so he sort of ran into a Leicester defender. Didn't block a tackle by doing it. Just ran a decoy line and ran into a Newcastle defender. And yellow card.
The one that I found
was
weirdest.
Was it a yellow card or was it just a pen?
I think it might have just been pen.
Oh, maybe it was just a pen. Anyway, it cost me a fancy rugby draft win.
That's terrible.
That's the point.
That's terrible,
That's
Tim.
The point. We can't have these decisions. Well, there we go. Costing me wins.
Now you're speaking to Tim. I think Ollie Slightone should have been red carded after 30 seconds in that game.
Yeah.
Did Morgan Passman get on the field this week?
I didn't notice.
He did on 69 minutes. Apparently this guy's electric. Electric. So
Passman.
So I've heard. But no one noticed him?
I didn't notice him.
You noticed him, Tim?
No,
shame.
Passman. Can't have been that electric.
No, maybe next time.
It wasn't really a game for electricity.
It wasn't a good game. It wasn't a good end to the weekend, rugby-wise.
I disagree.
I didn't enjoy it.
See, they excite me less to know, because
I fell asleep during Wasps' sale, and I nodded off during Leicester Newcastle.
How did you do it? It's incredible.
Leicester Newcastle did not grip me, sadly.
But the reason I like it is because they know exactly what their identity is, and they mould the game to what they want it to be. And that is an incredible attribute to have as a team. Incredible.
I would agree with that. It still doesn't mean it was exciting for me.
I can see why I can see less cultured rugby viewers can see it not being as exciting to me.
I like my mackerel fishing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm big into this.
Well, we've got some mackerel fishing coming on in Europe. Should we just rattle through these fixtures?
Yeah, one last thing. I'd just like to say hello to our listener in Japan. I'll read the email in full, but we got an email from Japan.
Lovely.
And our listener said we got him back into rugby following the World Cup.
So, amazing.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And off the Strong Zero, presumably. Cleaned up his life.
I hope he's on the Strong Zero. In fact, I wonder if he can send us some Strong Zero.
Ooh, now you're talking.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us on email. We'll have to do another...
Satora? Actually, why don't I give it to someone who can read? Here you are.
Oh, you want to read one now?
No. Don't read the email. Just a name.
Satoru Nakanishi.
There you go. Thank you for your email.
That is a lovely message.
And send us some Strong Zero.
Yes, please.
More importantly.
Lovely. Yeah, we will deal with your thought and your point and your question on a Q&A podcast, which we'll have to do soon.
Next week, isn't it? First.
I reckon so. Because we've got European rugby this weekend. Let's rattle through some of these then, because we must be getting on for a bloody marathon pod. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. We have... So I'm not going to do the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, just be better.
Champions Cup. So Friday... it's Good Friday, so it's a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
5:30 at the RDS.
I'll be at the RDS.
Nice. You love the RDS as well.
I love it, yeah.
Show jumping ground.
Yeah.
And this is a good game to go to.
I've got to do my... That reminds me, actually. I've got to do one of those COVID swab things. Have you done one?
I've had a couple for...
Got to do one tomorrow morning because the courier's picking it up at 10. Anyway. Sorry,
that's a game.
Enjoy that, Tim. Leinster hosting Toulon, so two powerhouses of the last 10 years of European rugby.
Leinster are going to put them to the sword comfortably.
Leinster, who rested all of their players. All of their players. They did not rest all of their players.
Devon Toner broke the record number of appearances for Leinster, I believe, and Conan and Ruddock were so good, and so is Henshaw again. He's having a bit of a renaissance.
Yeah, so Henshaw, and
they're going to pump him.
Henshaw making a strong play for the Lions 12 jersey. Albeit, I think he probably had his best game wearing the 13 jersey against England.
There was a bookies. The bookmakers have given their odds for who they expect to be in each Lions jersey, and Farrell is the clear favourite for the 10 jersey, and Henshaw the clear favourite for the 12 jersey.
Interesting.
They're wrong.
So Leinster Toulon, who's going to win that?
Oh, clearly Leinster comfortably, and then that'll set up a win against a game against Exeter.
Yeah, and just looking where Toulon are, so they're kind of mid table. Yeah. 1-11 out of 20 games,
they're going down.
Next game, 8 o'clock Friday night, Gloucester host La Rochelle. Less important fixture.
No, it's a vital important fixture.
Because this will be who Sale would play if they get through.
Yeah, because if COVID restrictions lift, which of course they won't, but in my imaginary world, when we get some of our freedoms back, I could go to La Rochelle and maybe even visit the U-boat pens if they're still there. I think they're still there. It's like a museum. Maybe I've made that up.
Visit the Cognac region.
Yeah, that's not so well, cause it, you know, no, we're not allowed to go, are we? So yeah, that is a very important, maybe one of the second most important game of the weekend.
It's where Ulster should have been, but we lost to Gloucester, so only ourselves to blame. La Rochelle to win that.
Yeah.
La Rochelle, who are currently second in the top 14.
Lol.
Good luck, Gloucester. 12:30 on Saturday, Wasps host Clermont.
Lol.
Clermont, who are third in the top 14.
Good luck with that, boys.
That is going to be an away win.
Yeah.
So we're already predicting two France away wins.
Beat down proportions?
Could potentially be, yeah. Clermont are a very, very good team.
Very, very, very good.
Next game, 3 o'clock Saturday, Munster host Toulouse.
I'm at that one as well.
Ooh,
nice.
Tie of the round, isn't it?
This is tie of the round. This is a classic early 2000s European matchup.
Potentially, if they lose, CJ Stander's last European game as well, which will...
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
If they lose.
Yeah.
Or until he signs for the Bulls and the Bulls play in Europe.
No, he's definitely retired from rugby. That's what he said. Definitely not signing for the Bulls.
We'll see. Predictions then. Toulouse, who are top of the top 14.
Toulouse. Yeah. I can't see past Toulouse. Even though I've not seen a single minute of any of their rugby this year.
All you need to know is Kano, Untermack, Cheslin Colby, Antoine Dupont, Ramos.
Kano is 37 years old.
He's still playing incredibly. Nonu's 38, is he?
That fills my heart with joy. I've still got a few more years left at Top H.
If there was a crowd there, because I was there a couple of seasons ago when they played Racing, who were flying high at the time, and they got a draw in the pool. They drew and probably should have won. And you cannot overestimate how influential that crowd is at Tobin. But without it, I think Toulouse. I think if it had been a proper home game, I'd say Munster would edge it.
I think we're going to pick a third French away win. And part of that is the matchups, but also...
You can put some money on that?
I probably will.
How is your money situation, Phil? Are you feeling a bit flush at the moment?
I'm feeling reasonably happy this weekend.
Just to be clear, should we just say the wins you went for in an accumulator? Because it's pretty impressive, Phil.
All of them?
I did put on a 7-way accumulator this week. And
I don't even know how to do an accumulator.
No, I'm not sure either.
I'm not allowed to. Anyway, but
I now have £714 in my account
on a £5 bet.
£5 bet. But the teams I went for. Let me just get it up. I went for Gloucester against Exeter, who won. Scotland away in France.
God, fair play.
Bristol at home to Quins. London Irish against Bath. Northampton against Worcester. Sale against Wasps, who, thanks to the last minute... I mean, there's like three or four last
what
minute tries.
Had.
And so then, really, it's that France-Scotland one you must be looking at, thinking that's the one that's going to...
Well, I actually did put the bet on twice with that result in both directions. So I put £10 on, as in I put two bets on, and that was the result I changed. With Scotland winning that, it was a big multiplier compared to France winning that. We'd have only won about like £100 in the other way around.
Wow.
Totally, totally fluked it with all that. And also bottled it because I laid the Leicester-Newcastle game. I had Leicester to win. Laid it for £175 to guarantee a £550 profit.
So I didn't because I 1,100% profit. No,
it's so £550 profit.
But on what's that as a percentage? Is it 10,000% profit?
So 100% profit would be
£50.
Would be no 100% profit would be £5 profit.
Oh, yeah.
That's
so. Oh, yeah.
1,000% would be £50, and a 10,000
would be £500. Yeah, so 10,000% profit.
You're like the next Neil Woodford.
But it's just a total. Like I rarely do these bets. I just fancied a few of the. I fancied Irish to beat Bath. I fancied Sale to win away. I fancied Gloucester to beat Exeter. So I thought I'll probably get reasonable odds on that. I thought Scotland could do it as well, but yeah, I bottled it. So I did because I didn't want the stress to reduce my potential winnings from 700. Well, if I hadn't have laid the Leicester game, I would have been either zero or £714.
It's basically like Deal or No Deal. Call the banker, and yeah, that's a fair amount to say deal.
Given how strongly favourites Leicester were to. Lay it and guarantee, no matter what that result, I was getting taking home £550 worth of profit. I was like, "There's no way. There's absolutely no way I can gamble that." I think if I'd have had to spend £300, so I would have reduced my winnings to say £400 or maybe even a bit more. I would have let it ride because I was confident Leicester were going to win, but that level of gamble was too much.
You didn't even bring any Negronis around for us. Thanks.
Not today. Maybe I'll treat you to a Negroni next time.
Yes,
I can physically buy you a Negroni.
Well, you could physically buy us one. I don't see why you couldn't. Anyway.
A Negroni altitude. That's what we'll save it for that.
Yes.
Next game.
Next game is... So, I'm saying Toulouse as well in that. I think we all are. Next game is going to be a France away loss because the Exeter Chiefs host Lyon.
Ooh.
Now, Lyon are a good team. They are in sixth. They
like
the moment.
Ball. I think that they like ball carrying at number eight now. I think that's their biggest downfall by a long way.
Comfortably.
So, Chiefs to win.
Yes. Then we have Racing 92 hosting Edinburgh.
Ooh, isn't it close?
Can you see a Scottish team replicating the heroics in Paris?
No,
neither can I.
Not when they've got Scotland's best player.
Racing to win that. Then Bordeaux host Bristol.
Well, we've seen Bristol batter Bordeaux before, yeah. So I don't think they're that bothered by them. Give me Bristol.
Give me Bristol. The Randrandra ball.
Mm. Yep.
And then JB, the one you're really interested in.
I will say that will be a very, very tough game, that, for Bristol.
Bristol, yeah.
They played in the semi-final of the Challenge Cup last year. At Ashton Gate, and it went to extra time.
I thought they smashed them.
No, Max Malins.
Do you know what I'm thinking of? Is it the Dragons that they smashed?
Who did they beat?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, they did. They absolutely annihilated the Dragons. Yeah.
The Dragons came out with a bunch of quote-unquote stars.
In the quarterfinals, and then in the semi-final at Ashton Gate the following week, they
who did they have in the final then?
They had Toulon.
Yeah, that's right.
But it went to extra time.
Yes, you're right. We watched that in Bath.
And Bordeaux have really changed their team. So at home, that's one ground I'd want to go see when they're crowds again.
In Bath. So we were having some. God, I hate our world. We were having beers in Bath, and there's a couple on the other table who were into rugby. Started talking, and some bloody waiter started telling us we can't talk to the tables next to us. I've never been so outraged. COVID, mate.
This was back in September.
Oh my God.
And everything's shut at 10 o'clock. And so it's like the Wild West in Bath.
Yeah,
and
10 o'clock, the curfew is the worst idea.
You cannot talk to someone.
Stop talking to them!
So were you still sat on your table and they were sat on their table?
There was no one else in this.
Oh my
in this
god!
Pub.
Oh my god!
Watching this game, there's no one about. We're just having a chat to someone.
Another one, right? One of my friends tried to go into the KFC. You can't come to KFC. Well, why not? COVID. All right. So he whips out his app and orders a. He orders either a Just Eat or an Uber Eats. Literally, so he had to get a third person to reach through the door to pass him his food on Uber Eats.
And people,
let's not get into this.
There's so many people that want this, and they want more.
Yeah, they want more. Well,
tell me what I can and can't do, when I can and can't do it.
Well,
please.
Undoubtedly, if you're going to lock down for the amount of deaths that we've had so far, it's tragic, because they all are. No doubt we'll be locking down for global warming if you really do believe that we're going to have a fiery death in 12 years' time. But frankly, having gone through this, I think I would choose the fiery death in 12 years' time. A slow, fiery death over 12 years.
I think we're due a meteor or two.
Yeah, please, meteor, hurry up and hit us, because this is not worth it. It's not worth it.
We're existing, we're not living.
Yeah, exactly.
The final game of the weekend.
Sale. There you are.
Away at Scarlets.
Not even close. This
game, the Bristol Bordeaux game and the Munster Toulouse game, are the hardest to pick.
No, it's not particularly hard, mate.
I think Sale will win this. Scarlets finished third in Conference B in Pro 14, but I don't know.
So there's quite a lot of away wins we've gone for. Is that 5 out of 8 or 6 out of 8 away wins?
I've certainly La Rochelle, Clermont, Toulouse. Bristol's a question. That's going to be a tough game for Bristol and Sale. So
5 out of 8.
And that's 700 quid guaranteed, you reckon?
I wouldn't say that. I don't think I'm going to be putting on an accumulator for some time. My luck has run out.
Excellent.
Just totally fluked that.
Right. Wrap this up, Tim. We'll be back to talk it all through, and we'll come back with a Q&A pod very soon. So please get your emails, thoughts, and starting points at contactagechasers@gmail.com. We are on YouTube. We are on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking and waiting to slide into your DMs.
Oh, and I'm interviewing Josh Bayliss on the podcast this week.
Fantastic.
Oh, your crush.
Yeah, the great Josh Bayliss.
Devilishly handsome Josh Bayliss. Mm. So let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.